Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth. On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports In Depth is the show. John Coltrane opens up every show with his legendary Dear Lord. And with that, that is our cue. Open up with a prayer as we kneel down and pay homage to the one and only true God and his darling Son, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Dear Lord! Our Father, who art in heaven, we thank you for another day. And we thank you, more importantly, Lord, that you have your will, you have your will. We thank you for the little things that we so largely take for granted. And we ask that your way be our way in every single way and do. We thank you, dear Lord, for our family and our friends. We thank you for the rain, dear Lord. We thank you, dear Lord, for blessings forthcoming. Blessings that have come and all, without question, undeserved. We ask you, dear Lord, that give us so much of what we want, Lord, what we need. And we need thee every hour. Dear Lord, thank you. We ask you to bless our families, the panel in its entirety, and their family. And bless my family here in New York City, my family in Virginia, my family in Brazil. Bless my friends. And we pray the prayer that you told us, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, because trespasses, forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Now the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the Channel Sports Depth Show. They're checking in. Coming in by horseback, Dr. Sharp. Lois, Nate B. Baseball's in the house. Mel, go, Sep, Brunei. Siemens will be here in the First Lady of Sports, Lady A. Last night I was the First Lady of Blake Radio. As we were over at the college, Lehman College, as you know, last night, she was here. We told you about her during the course of the week. And she was there last night. Oh, she was in the house. The First Lady of Disco. The only lady to ever win a Grammy. In fact, the only disco artist ever in the business to win a Grammy. Ladies and gentlemen, she was there last night. The legendary, the incomparable Miss Gloria Gaynor. First, I was afraid. Go ahead, Gloria. Come on, give us a minute. Please, Gloria. Right, please. Million records. 20 languages have been interpreted to. The number one song, 1979. Sing the song, lady. First lady. And she was there last night. Smokey Robinson will be there this weekend. We can play with Smokey later on, too. And they were just talking. It was a great show. As you know, there's a special place in my heart always for Miss Gloria Gaynor. I was blessed to work at Cliffside Music with her and her then legendary manager and husband, Linwood Maxwell Simon. The stories are uncountable of the gracious. I remember in Brazil, we went into a shopping mall, and when they heard Gloria Gaynor was there, you know how they always play all the overhead music? Everything they started playing was her music. I mean, first of all, to have all her music in Brazil. Honey Bee, Never Can Say Goodbye, yeah, I Will Survive. I was waiting for my favorite of all her song, Outside of I Will Survive, of course, is This Love Affair. Check it out, check it out. This Love Affair. They had an album, and when Mr. Simon had his office on Park Avenue, he had an office on Park Avenue, and when he had the office on Park Avenue, and the album shows a stretch of New York City, and it's highlighted the Park Avenue area. It was the Park Avenue sound, and I was so honored that he mentioned me on that album too, as giving kudos and thankfulness for helping the album to Stanley, the sports reporter. And you know, you just can't say enough about Gloria. Like I said, she walked into that shopping mall, and for the next half hour, that's all they played was her music. I was startled somewhat, and I shouldn't have been. We were up on the Amazon. Hear me? We were up on the Amazon at the new Gloria Gaynor. Kids. But the first time I saw her perform at Jones Beach, this little girl, 10 years old, crying to see Gloria Gaynor. A 10-year-old girl crying to see Gloria Gaynor. A 10-year-old little girl crying to see Gloria Gaynor. She wanted to see Gloria Gaynor. And I remember when we were going to Italy. We were going to Sardinia. She was performing in Sardinia, Italy. We stayed in one of the most exclusive hotels in the world. And when we went, as we flew into a major airport, we had to go into a little small stopover spot. And Miss Gaynor went into the back to sit down and relax. And she was sitting by herself. And this little girl, Gloria Gaynor, had to be 11 years old in Italy. Her impact is been far-ranging. 20 different languages that song has been interpreted in. 14 million records. It was number one across the board. It was Subplanet 1 week by Rod Stewart, Don't You Think I'm Sexy. But the next week, they got themselves together. Once again, I Will Survive, number one record across the board in America. Only disco artist in the history of recorded music to garner a Grammy, the legendary Miss Gloria Gaynor. We'll talk some more about Gloria down the line. Lady A, you know what happened, and the gang is all here. We got a horde of people here, too. I think we got everybody here tonight, and we got some extras. We got the panel. Did Milo call from Chicago? Milo Jones? Okay. Was there anybody here that...
in the house.
Who's this? Dr. I.
Hey.
Okay, good. We got you back, Dr. I. I'll get to you in a minute as the Knicks have made the playoffs. Lady A, because I know you and C-Wings. Devlin, C-Wings, you here? C-Wings? Okay, C-Wings.
No,
Lady I. Oh, well, I know Legend Howard.
Harold!
Oh, here we go. Now she's here. I should ask you first, Howard, then we would have got her. Next time I know how to do this thing.
Hello, Lady A.
Hey, Harold.
Lady A, Devlin Rodriguez is going to fight. He's got it. I just got it across the thing. Aaron No Doubt Trout for the title. June 2nd, he's getting the title shot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to study.
That's our boy, Doc.
I just got the email, and just before I came on air, and I remember we met him at the Top Rank press conference, him and his son, so I'm going to send you a copy of that. But he's getting the title shot, Jan. Fight of the Year. His fight at the Garden in December was tabbed Fight of the Year.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Lady, I don't seem too excited about it.
Huh?
Really?
She's not feeling well. You know, she's a little excited.
Still is playing in her jets. She really ain't feeling too good.
No, it's simply because Delvin is fighting a tough cookie. He's way over his head. That's why. But he's getting a title shot. This dude is no walkover.
Well, I mean, as it should be, the thing is, at least the thing is getting the opportunity. And I thought she would, you know, be just like that. I mean, we got a chance. In fact, she was the one who touted him. She sort of scouted him. She touted him. And we met him and his son.
But I just hope, you know what? I just hope that this fight, he doesn't fight this guy. I hope he doesn't fight this guy, Doc, the way he fought the other guy in last fight. Dusty, remember, like he was bending down?
He fought the Raging Bull, but he had to adjust to the Raging Bull.
Yeah.
That's how he beat
exactly
him.
Exactly what he said. Remember when you talked to him, Dusty, and he boasted, he says, yeah, I know that's not the thing to do, but that was the thing to do in this
fight. The only way to get him.
Yeah, it was the thing to do in this fight, and it worked out for him.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Dr. Sharp Lois there, Dr. Sharp Dusty, to be down there, but you know, it's something that you picked up on, to something that he came back and said, yeah, I know that's not how the book goes by, but that was what we had planned and how we figured it was going to work for us. And he won, so it worked. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, Spider Sub Show. Doc, slow down. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports in Depth for the show. Got a holla out across the waters over there in my beloved Brazil, São Paulo. Got to say hello to Rosie and Marcelo. Her brother-in-law has a birthday tomorrow. Cunhado, I believe I said that right. He has a birthday tomorrow. Got a chance to speak to her lovely daughter, Paula. Her birthday passed back in March 11th. She's in 4 days from the eyes of March. Paula, Rosie's birthday is 7 days after my mother, January 28th. She got a chance to shout out my mom's, too. My man, Leonardo, in Minas Gerais, not too far from São Paulo. Boa noite, mi amigo. And thank you for listening in. I love to have my Brazilian continuously listening. Hope Susie is down there in Bahia, in Salvador, the capital of Bahia. And to my friend in Algiers, Rosa. And just want to thank everybody for listening in from around the world. And Rooney, why don't you make the introduction to the Sports and Definition?
Oh, Doc, is you giving shout-outs? I'm going to give shout-outs to everybody in Riverhead, Long Island.
Lady, hold on. Hold on a bit. Go ahead. Just a minute.
Rooney? I just quickly want to again welcome the Sports and Definition to our weekly panel discussion from continent to continent and all over the globe. So you're here, we're here, we're ready. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, and Lady A, thank you, Lady. You tell our good buddy from Riverdale?
No, I wanted to give, a little shout-out to everybody out in Riverhead, Long Island, our listeners out there, who also, Lids, who was provided us with the service, with providing us with the hats and tees.
Oh. Great job.
Great job with hats and tees. And Vicky and Tiffany out in Riverhead, who served me this weekend, said they were going to be tuning in for the first time. So I hope that they're listening in, giving us the support out there in Riverhead, Long Island. And Justin Nash, who now left Lids out in Riverhead and is now going to be in Kings Plaza. He's running a show out there in Kings Plaza. Lids. He said, take a swing by. He's going to do hats for us over there, too, Doc.
So, what was the show?
Out in Kings Plaza, yeah. So.
Okay, give us a date now. And the name of his company is what now?
Lids. Yeah.
Lids?
Yeah, Lids.
Okay, well, for the first half hour of Sports in Depth, we brought you by Lids. As you heard, the work they've done for us, they're the great Sports in Depth. In fact, my promo now is going to be on Skype. Will be the cap and the jacket from the legendary collection. So, the first half hour of Sports in Depth is brought to you by Lids. The number one cap and other accessories in the world of sports and life in general. Lids. Hey, you got the lid on right here on Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Gang, boxing, we'll talk a little bit about that next week. Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson. It looks like nobody's going to be seeing that fight. I can't understand the rejections that all the media got for that fight. I mean, that fight, they should have gave everybody tickets to bring somebody with you. I mean, nobody wants to see this guy on closed circuit. Harold, Chad Dawson, and Bernard Hopkins, how do you see that?
Well, neither one of them can draw. They can't draw even in their hometown. That's the reason why they're going to Atlantic City.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that, basically, Bernard is just, everybody, people like him where he came from and how he, achieved what he did. But now he's on, he went over the number. I mean, he's 40-something years old, and he said he was going to retire. He's still there. And then Chad Dawson, he's not exciting to watch anyway. So, I mean, who cares? That kind of situation. Who really cares? I mean, nobody knocked out nobody. It's not an exciting fight. Bernard hits and holds. Chad Dawson boxes and moves. And there's nothing exciting about the whole fight. So, who cares?
We gotta figure one thing out, though, Harold. Is Chad Dawson fighting MMA or is he boxing now? Is he going to try to throw Bernard down on the canvas again?
You got to understand, I was watching the fight last night with them little guys, the 118-pound, 122-pound kids.
Mm.
And these kids go at it right there swinging, and it's exciting. I mean, you got to understand, people that did look at boxing back in the day, those are the kind of fights they did. There was a rough, tough, to-the-death situation. These guys today, they're just fighting just to hurry up and get out of the ring so they can get their paycheck.
Yep.
So it's not like people's not seeing what they're doing. They're seeing what they're doing, but that's the reason why nobody's turning on the TV or buying the tickets, because it's got that boring. It's got the The talent is just not there. We got to go back into the hoods, back into the jungles, up into the mountains, and we got to start bringing them kids out here and start bringing them to fight. That's what we need.
Rock Stanley, Sports Jeff on the Blake Radio Network. Radio Show on the channel. Sports Jeff in the show. Okay, I've got Hoopster. You here with us tonight, Hoopster?
Yes, I am. Hi, everybody.
Hoopster, hey. What's up, Hoops?
Okay, C-Wings, you back with us?
I'm going to pick you later.
C-Wings is here. C-Wings is here.
Good
evening, the panel. And to our esteemed listeners out there.
Okay, hold on. Who's another voice?
Yeah.
I got another voice came in. Okay. Dr. I.
Yeah, I'm here.
We got you here. Knicks in the playoffs. How far can they go? What's the thing here? The Knicks win more games when Stoudemire is not there. He's back. Is he going to be a detriment? I mean, how far are they going to go, Dr. I?
I don't think they can go that far because you're playing. I think they'll play Miami, which they have a better shot against Miami than against the Bulls. Because the Bulls, they're winning it all, but their defense is too tough for anybody to handle. I think the only team that may figure out how to beat the Bulls might be Pops in San Antonio. Those guys that seem to always be there.
Tony,
and that's something I'd like to talk about.
Good.
So the Knicks, I think, will give Miami a definite big-time fight. There is a chance of an upset, but you would have to say Miami's a favorite. One, they got the home field advantage, and two, if they are clicking, they're very, very hard to beat because besides being the great offensive team they are, they're a hell of a defensive team, and that's sort of underrated as far as how good they are.
Yeah, well, that'll be a very good series to begin with, a great series. I mean, they'll probably win in 6 or 7, but that would be my only thing, however, with the Knicks is, I have two quick things. I think that, number one, I think the spacing is better when the two superstars are on the floor at the same time. I just think their spacing is better when they, when they're not on the floor.
You bring up a great point because it reflects in the numbers when Stoudemire is not there. And I remember asking Trent Tucker that. Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Show, the channel Sports Up Show. And the spacing, if those of you don't know, it's how the floor goes. And I remember telling Trent, I said, you know what, I don't see what, you know, all this hoopla over Tony Kukoc. And he said, no, Mel, you know, Tony helps with the spacing on the floor. Rooney, it's, go ahead, you got it.
No, Doc, I was just going to say that, as you said, I think the spacing is better between them. When I would bring up Murray off the bench myself, I think they'd make the second team better. If you can sell him on coming off the bench, I think they have a better second team. The spacing is better. Carmelo's really much more comfortable when he's kind of the center, of the offense. The offense goes through him. And I just think that they're a better all-around team when they have that kind of, the spacing together. It makes it sort of like a two-tier type of offense and defense. And quite frankly, the center, whose name just went past me, but who's out at the moment, I think he's actually as great as Carmelo and company has been. I think their center has basically been their MVP for the offense, rebounds, and his job that he does in the middle.
You bring up a good point because right now he's shooting the highest percentage from the floor ever in the history of the NBA.
They're only dunks. He's got a 70% dunk record. I don't think he's taking 3 jump shots all year.
No. I don't want him to take three jump shots.
I love this guy. If it wasn't for this guy, the Knicks aren't in the playoffs. This guy is the heart of the team. Him and Melo.
Melo has been playing very well.
For us to make any speculation on who would be better on the first team, the second team, off the bench, it says foolish. You got a guy named Woodson there. I think he's doing a hell of a job. He's going to figure it out better than we can. And basically, when you talk about spacing, it's the second team that's concerned more with spacing because you got the 3-point shooters. The first team isn't concerned as much with spacing because they play high pick and roll, and Melo plays one-on-one. So the spacing in the first team is not that important. With the second team, it's definitely important because that's where all the 3-point shooters are coming from J.R. Smith and from Novocaine. They have to be spaced correctly.
All right, well, okay.
All right, now,
you know,
wait.
Hold on.
Hey, John,
hold on. Hold on. Go,
yeah,
go ahead.
This is Rob out in Cleveland.
Good, Rob. Yeah, Cleveland. Yeah, I wanted to get. We got Cleveland in the house. In fact, you were there the other night when Cleveland kind of ran roughshod over the Knicks there, right?
I would yeah. say roughshod, but the Knicks showed up a little late and suits for the first half.
He fell asleep.
But, yeah, like I said, but when you talk about spacing, man, you want to bring 3-point shooters in with Carmelo and Amari, you're in trouble. But you know what? You keep Tyson in there. You keep Amari and Carmelo in there. Yeah, you can execute some high pick rolls and everything. But you bring some of those 3-point shooters off the bench when you can even see from the Cavs game that which they lost. Don't get me wrong, JR heated up a little too late. That's all that happened, man. They could have easily taken it.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Do we go back, Rob, to that same old mental thing that it was we won, we were in the playoffs. Was there a psychological letdown? Was there a lack of concern and energy, you think, on your part?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I was watching, you know, my hometown team. I'm sitting here. My comment was simply, it's like, wait, which team's playing for another spot in the playoffs? Who's trying to move up? And it wasn't the fact that the stars didn't show up, but, I mean, you know, you had the you know, one of our D-leaguers stepped up, Manny Harris, who isn't supposed to do much of anything but show up, score, and that's it. And he picked up more rebounds than Amari and Tyson, which is probably a big problem, you know, starting shooting guard. And then you had Kyrie come back with an effort, but you know what? Honestly, if you put the Knicks up against Miami, just make sure all Miami stars are there and one of the Knicks superstars are gone, and you're going to have yourself a fantastic series.
It's going to be a fantastic series anyway. And I have a different philosophy about the playoffs, Doc. Everybody's trying to locked into them. The Knicks trying to make the sixth seed, avoid Miami, avoid Chicago. My philosophy is this, okay? If you think you're ready for prime time, then bring on the best, okay? Bring on Miami. Bring on Chicago. Let's see what you got.
Well, yeah, but true. But the higher you get up, you're talking about not only playing a team that's not as affordable, but maybe a chance of getting the home court advantage. And it's a sad commentary, but the home court advantage is just ridiculous. I mean, you know, push comes to shove, you're going to shoot more free throws. The push comes to shove, you're going to get the call. So, I mean, you want to go as high as you can because it betters your situation as far as the foe that you play and as far as the home court.
This is true,
now,
Doc, but
right.
If you're supposed to be a prime-time team,
Rooney,
you don't want to go
Rooney,
into the playoffs here,
I'm with you, baby. I'm with you.
I don't believe in going into the playoffs here, Doc. That's not my philosophy. My philosophy is not to fear any team. My philosophy is if you're ready for prime time, then bring the best guard. Let's go.
Rooney, I'm with
now,
you,
hold
Rooney,
on
but
one
you know
second.
What? I have no problem going into prime time with the edge, you know, to me. There's a great line that you wrote about Jackie Robinson. They said Jackie Robinson didn't come to play. Jackie Robinson came to beat you. I like your theory, Rooney. Doc Stanley's putting up on the Blake Fitter Network, Rainbow Soul Chimp, putting up a show. We got Sea Wings with us and Lady A. They've got to run back to assignment, so we're going to try to get them in here early. Sea Wings, you made your trip to Cleveland. Forget Cleveland. There's talk that your man Tebow, did I say that wrong? It's going to be number one quarterback in the Jets. Hoopster, in the eyes of the Sea Wings, one thing to say about Tebow, he's Mr. Pittsburgh.
That's right.
Go ahead, Sea Wings.
That's right.
Tebow is in every ad you see now. Jockey underwear, this guy's underwear. He's the man right now. He's the most popular athlete in New York City.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
let's see what he does on the field.
And we're back to Tebow mania because he's in NYC now.
Well, let's see how he plays on the field. That's all I say. But,
well, but you know,
I was at the Knick game.
He was there, too?
In Cleveland? I was sitting right next to Rob. Rob was cheering on his team. I was cheering on the Knicks. I mean, we had a good time. But it looks like the Knicks were somewhat confused in their passing. I mean, I mean, we had pretty good seats. And, you know, they lost a couple of balls on the passing. They just looked out of sync. They looked tired. They were playing I think, and from what I saw, like they just wanted to get on that plane and get out of Cleveland. But then they came back today and they beat Atlanta. So they have to be consistent. They have to rebound. I mean, they weren't rebounding, but they did close the gap. They were down at almost 20 points, and they closed it down to 8.
T-Wings. I got that. I want to talk football, baby. I want to talk people.
But Doc, it's just that game. I said you can't go into the playoffs like that. You have to get in that mindset, and you have to play like it is the championships. You can't say we're in and let's just turn down the fire.
I'm going to tell you something.
You're absolutely right, C-Wings. What happens is there's a letdown. They made the playoff by a miracle. Somebody got beat and they're in. So now there was a letdown with that team.
Aren't they ridiculous. The
you
got to
play.
Miracle.
You got to still
they're
go
in,
for the gut and tear everybody up, man.
Just
lay down.
Dusty, no, they didn't. It's not a miracle. They're in. They're solidly in. But
they're
in by
a miracle. Somebody lost.
Not a miracle.
Make
the
playoffs.
Come on, aren't
they
going
the way in?
Hold on.
Hey, just check Woodson's record. Give me a break. Check Woodson's record since Woodson's a coach. They got rid of that cancer. The cancer almost ruined that team. As soon as they throw Woodson, go look at their record. And let's talk about another team, a team that's been the most wins in the NBA since the All-Star game, totally overlooked. Doc, who is that team?
Tell us, Doc.
The Indianapolis Pacers. Have anyone heard of them?
Yeah.
Give the boys a little credit out in Indianapolis.
No question. I just think... I mean, there's two things here. And I remember Larry Bird. And Larry Bird, you know, in the eyes of a lot of people, could be the greatest all-around player that ever played. He's definitely one of the greatest Celtics. And Bird talked about, you know, when the Celtics had to play the Sixers, we're talking Julius and Moses and Tony and Cheeks. He said, you know what, there was times during the games, during the week leading to that, where I rested myself. And, you know, if you look at the short preseason that they had, it's only automatic that they're going to get tired and psychologically want to take a rest. I mean, fly ball to center field, you're going to run down the first base as fast as you can, but, you know, you made it out. They made the playoffs, and I think psychologically, you know, you're just going to do it. I mean, just I am a little tired, especially this year where you've had games where you played 2-3 nights in a row. You know, it's been a crazy, unheard of schedule. So I think psychologically,
in terms of sports, there's no excuse. You got to play your guts out, plain and simple.
Dusty, I understand what the rule is, but they're human. I understand the mindset, but they're human.
They're high-paid athletes. They're not human. They're high-paid athletes. They're supposed to perform.
I'm glad you're not my general manager. You know. You know what I mean? I can see you telling Shula Joe Jackson, who hits 400, that he don't get no raise because Ty Cobb still beat him.
That's right. You're fired.
On the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Network for the show, and that did happen. It's unbelievable. I was looking at some numbers. You know, Roger Hornsby won the Triple Crown, 40 home runs, a .401 batting average, and 152 RBIs. Ted Williams, this is amazing about Ted Williams. In 1941, Ted Williams hit .406, led the league in batting and hits, didn't win MVP. The next year, Ted Williams won the Triple Crown and didn't win the MVP. There was a four-year period where he finished second and won the MVP one time, and this is amazing. In the 2 years he won the Triple Crown, okay, he finished second in MVP ballot. Got to be crazy. Lady A, how do you see it next week? I got you the one to hold you up. Sue me too long. Seaways, we got to talk football in a minute, baby. Okay,
Can I just ask Dusty a quick question? I just want to ask Dusty. Did you see the Juan Manuel Marquez fight with that guy Fedchenko?
Yeah, he was coasting for 12 rounds. He didn't want to knock him out.
My question is, have you seen how big he got?
Yes, he's on steroids.
You think so?
No. He's on Mexican steroids. No, he's bulked up because he's 140 pounds now.
But he didn't lose his speed. That's what to me is like a little.
No, he didn't lose his speed. He He didn't lose his power, and he wanted to go the whole 12 rounds. In the 11th and 12th, he accelerated, almost knocked the guy out. But he's big now. He's good for Brandon Rios, and Brandon Rios doesn't want to fight him.
Yeah, but so, Brandon Rios is a problem. I think he wants to go up because he's still having that problem making weight.
He's going to 140 pounds now.
Yeah.
Right,
Marquez. Let's hope it goes through. Yeah, they said he was going to fight Yorky Scamboa, and that fight got squashed.
Scamboa?
Yeah, but that was before.
Before.
That was at 135 pounds.
Right.
135 pounds, and Gamboa pulled out because the money wasn't right.
Right.
So
right,
he went to fight Abril, who kicked the crap out of him, and he stole the decision.
Yes.
But now there's a talks about Marquez and Brandon Rios somewhere down the line. So that should be a good fight. Yeah, Marquez and Brandon Rios, and that should be a good fight.
I'm not for nothing, but I was, you know, after that Bradley fight got signed with Pacquiao, you know, everybody's saying Bradley's a pushover. I don't think Bradley's going to be a pushover for Pacquiao.
No, he's not. No, he's not. The thing is with Bradley, like I asked him, he says, what is your main your main comfort zone? And my main comfort zone is that I don't have to punch up now. I can punch straight at Pacquiao. And Harold Wesson said it very clearly that Pacquiao doesn't have to punch up either. He could punch straight out. And who is harder? Pacquiao. So does he have a chance, Bradley? Of course. But does Pacquiao can Pacquiao knock him out? Of course he could. So it's
Pacquiao's main thing is just that. Main thing to get people is that straight left. If he catches you with that straight left, it's on. You're done. That's why Marquez exposed him. When Marquez exposed him, Marquez was able to avoid that lead, that straight left, and that's how he was able to,
that's Pacquiao's Achilles heel, Marquez. But Pacquiao can hit you with that right hook also.
Harold, come on, Harold.
The reason why I say that the fight ain't going to be is going to be exciting. All it is, this is the style that Pacquiao likes. He likes guys that are coming to them, okay?
Right.
And everybody that comes to him, he's going to beat to death. First thing, he's got fast hands. He's got good movement. He's got a pretty fair, good defense. And this is this is more of a fight to make him look good.
Right.
Because this guy's going to come to him than, you know, him having a hard fight. It's going to be an interesting fight, but Pacquiao's going to take pretty much every round. The kid's style. The kid is a good kid. He's going to try hard and everything, but he's just going to be out of his class because Pacquiao is just that better of a pro, and he's got the style that Pacquiao likes. Come right to me.
Pacquiao is all about angles.
Back up. Harold, what's your reaction to Gamboa saying he pulls out of a fight because the money wasn't right?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, you hear that a lot with a lot of these fights. Like I told you before, like I said early today, was that the fighters today want to hurry up and get in the ring and get out so they can get paid. There's nothing about, you know, pride, no loyalty, no nothing about these guys. These guys today is just a piece of joke to me. And I mean, like I said, I got to go back to the hood, go into the jungle, go back up the mountains, and I'm going to give you some real fighters. So
go to Rikers
with
Island.
All these guys.
Just say the same thing. Go ahead, T-Wings, come on. I want to talk football here, man. What's happening? I mean, Tebow's got a place in Hoboken. He's living next to Eli Manning. What's the story? I know you and Coach Ryan are talking daily. What's the scoop here, T-Wings? Come on, man. Don't be talking this basketball stuff. I got my man from Cleveland. What's happening with the Jets?
Tebow.
First of all, I think Lady A was a little down because she heard that they're not getting rid of Sanchez this year, so I think she's a little down about that.
But
as we know, this week they're gonna have the draft up here in New York City at Radio City Music Hall, and all eyes are gonna be on. As we know, it's expected that number one pick overall. Andrew Luck is going to go to Indianapolis to plug in that big hole by the trade of Peyton Manning, RG3, to Washington Redskins, Heisman Trophy winner. So that's all set in stone. That's expected. Indianapolis have talked to Andrew Luck and told him that they will be signing him. As far as the Jets go, we picked 16 in the first round, dead center. And the Giants, having won the Super Bowl, picked 32nd overall in the first round draft
pick. It's always great to pick last, see? That means you won the Super Bowl, so that's a good thing.
But like I said earlier, in the season before, you know, before the Giants, after the Giants won the Super Bowl, their team weren't going to be the same. I mean, you know, we lost a lot of key players. Mario Manningham, you know, due to the salary cap, a lot of people weren't going to come back. Yeah, Brandon Jacobs, they got rid of him.
Were you surprised that Jacobs didn't come back, Sewings?
Oh, it wasn't too surprising. I mean, at all the controversy, especially the beginning of last season, it was kind of expected that he wasn't going to be re-signed. It looked like the 49ers picked up most of their players that
at this rate, Sewings, I think I'm going to call Lavernius Coles and bring him out of retirement to help us out. I don't know.
But you should see, the last time the Giants picked 32, they got some pretty good players that helped them win a lot of football games. So as far as the Giants
who were the players?
You know, they picked up Kenny Phillips, Terrell Thomas, Mario Manningham. I still don't understand why they got rid of him. And now the Giants, 49ers picked him up, and they have Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Who, like you said, Doc, New England was going to suffer
for lack of
trading Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Doc, you still talking Randy Moss, Doc? You've been singing his praises for the last 2 years now.
Well, I'll find Jerry Rice the best to do it. And not only that, my thing would be, you know, I remember years ago, Whitey Herzog took a shortstop just so the opposition wouldn't have him. So my thing is, you take Moss so nobody else gets him, and if somebody else wants him, you can get something for him. I mean, you know, it's amazing. It's the same old thing I always say. It's, you know, there's always a problem to pay a brother. It's amazing.
Doc,
it's always a problem.
Doc?
Huh?
Moss hasn't produced in years. He's 34 years old. So what are you talking about? You're talking about Moss in his prime? You're not.
Moss is still better than 50% of the guys there. If nothing else, his rep means I gotta double him. His rep means I can't put him one. His rep means that, and the proof is, what the hell has Welker done since he's gone? He can't even catch a football no more. He can't even catch a football no more. No, what has Brady done?
That has nothing to do with this guy Moss being there or not being there.
Stick to the basketball. Randy Moss absent has made New England was a super football team. It is a proven fact statistically that the New England Patriots are not the same football team. Tom Brady is not the same quarterback. How many 2-touchdown games has Brady had since Moss is gone? They're not the same team. Only because the Giants...
They're not the same team because the players change. Teams change.
And one of the changes was a guy named Randy Moss. Only Jerry Rice has been a greater pass receiver than Randy Moss. Gang, don't move. Let me do a little plug here. We get back. Dr. I want you and the Hoopster to talk because the whole Kentucky team has left, my goodness.
Don't forget our Sports in Depth Hall of Fame.
We got it.
Let's give praise to their senior. He was the glue of the team. He won the championship game for them.
There's Dr. I for me. Dr. I, Sports Depth on the Blake, the Hilbert Rainbow, so the Champ Sports Depth show. They're all here. Dr. I, the fame came back. We'll be back in just a minute. Little commercial plug. And we get back to the crew. We got to keep an eye on the time. Lady A and Sewings have got to do a little assignment here. Howard Weston, we're going to talk boxing, talk everything. Kentucky wins the NCAA championship. And then everybody says, you know what? It's time to go play basketball with the big boys. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake, Rainbow Store, the Channel Sports Depth on the show. Harvey Farmer's number one disciple, Nate Baseball. We'll be back to the baseball in just a minute. Don't anybody move. Nobody say another word, please.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley. Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul of Town. Sports and Depth of the show. Dr. I came back. The Hoopster returned. Doc Sharp. Dusty's here. The First Lady of Sports Lady A. Weston Jr. Mel Belzell. Nate B. Baseball. They're all here. It's a Sunday finale. And we're talking to AT and Jets. Hey, I see. Yeah, Knicks are in the playoffs. Knicks are saying sayonara to New Jersey, coming to a little, as Murray DeKay would say, not too far from the old Paramount, too. And Junior's where the best cheesecake in the world has had. Murray Gaynor last night at Lehman College. Smokey Robinson, the legend that lives himself, is here this Saturday. Smokey, wrote my girl. My guy, first big hit for Temptations. The way you do the things you do, just the host of great song. Don't believe what Smokey lit on, but Smokey will be in town at Lehman College this weekend. Last night, the First Lady of disco, Gloria Gaynor. Gloria is such a great cook too. I mean, working there. Sometimes she would say, she tells, "Honey," tells her husband, and she, "Yeah, you want some meat, Stanley?" "Yeah, I want some meat." Great cook, great person, and just performed as only she can. Open up with the "I Am What I Am," that great song of hers. A couple of things that she wrote herself, and close with the legendary and incomparable "I Will Survive." Nate B. Baseball, let's talk. What's happening around the Hot Stove League? I guess they're going to let the Ozzie Guillen stay down there and manage in Miami. Jose Reyes is coming in town here pretty soon.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
What's the latest?
Too good.
Huh?
Well, so far.
It's moved on from Ozzie Guillen to Bobby Valentine as the manager topic. And it's like you say, Doc. I mean, there's not a score for the clubhouse. You know, the Red Sox, they changed their front off. You know, they changed Theo Epstein. They got rid of Francona, but they didn't change their pitching. You know, and they're last in the league in pitching. And so, you know, everything's about Valentine's comments and this or that, but try to make a big splash by getting rid of the beer and chicken in the clubhouse. But maybe they should have made a big splash on the pitcher mound. In addition, we also got the perfect game, the 21st, you know, ever thrown by a pitcher who had a breakout year last year by going 9-9, you know. So it's a kind of a surprise perfect game there. So those are pretty much the big thing, you know.
Yeah, and now, who once again, tell everybody who threw that perfect game?
Phil Humber from the Chicago White Sox there.
Yeah.
And he went 9-9 last year, and, you know, that was the first year he won more than, like, two games, you know.
Wow.
Hey, Nick, can R.A. Dickey be far behind?
What's that?
Can R.A. Dickey be far behind?
I don't know. He's on my fantasy baseball team, so I somehow.
I mean, that's amazing stuff.
Phil Humber was the first round draft choice of the New York Mets several years ago. Imagine if he pitched the perfect game, it would have been the first no hitter in Met history.
Yeah, they never had.
No, well, Seaver had one, and until the ninth inning, Quayle hit the baseball. Dick Young actually took away Doc Gooden's no hitter. Doc Gooden had a no hitter. Guy made an error at third base, and Young turned around and gave the guy a hit instead of error. Gooden would have been the first. Read the amazing stat about Gooden. Doc Gooden in his second year struck out. In his first year, he struck out 8 more batters than he did his second year, and pitched like 50 more innings. But his second year, he became not only the youngest, but also the first African American pitcher to lead the major leagues
in the Triple Crown of pitching. 24 wins, 4 losses, a 1.53 ERA. That ERA was only topped in the 20th century by Bob Gibson, who was 22-9. The year that he won the 22-9, he lost 2 games by the score of 1-0. He had 13, I'll say it one more time, 1-3 shutouts and 28 complete games. The greatest one-year pitching performance in the history of baseball. And it was just really astonishing. But and Gibson also, ironically, became the first African-American pitcher to win a gold glove. Nate B. Baseball, Jeter's been really hitting well.
Tashara.
What's that, lady?
Tashara.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the thing. But, I mean, the guy I'm thinking about is Derek. I mean, Derek is you know, the senior statesman of the team. How much longer can Derek do another? Can he fulfill the contract and go beyond it? Is he surprising you by this hot-hitting Dr. Baseball?
He is surprising me, but that's what great players do. They continue to surprise. And I mean, this is just my guess. My guess is that he's going to play out this contract, you know, and not embarrass himself. I mean, play well during this contract and then going to retire. I think it ends in 2014. Am I wrong? I mean, he's got an option for 2014, a player option or something like that. My guess is he plays through the contract, plays well, and retires. And that's just my guess, you know, as far as that goes.
Nate, yeah. Let me ask you a question. Yeah. I know that for the longest he was always talking about being involved in baseball more so as a owner. Is that still something that he's still trying to pursue, or?
I'm not 100% sure. You know, I don't have any information about that. It would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, depends on. I mean, the prices of franchise. What baseball franchise are going to go for with this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, last one. I know it's the Dodgers, but that price, you know, kind of surprised a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, around baseball, $2 billion.
It surprised everybody.
Yeah. But I did want to mention one thing. Speaking of that, I just did want to say one thing about Magic Johnson. You just see, I'm not saying Magic Johnson has to do with, Matt Kemp hitting so well and the Dodgers off to a 12-4 start. But I would think if a lot of other people, would have been involved in that, I'd have been, wow, that's a bad move. But Magic Johnson just has a track record of doing well and everything he's done. I mean, from basketball to to business, to being the spokesperson for HIV.
One of the greatest human beings
to
walk the earth. Just
if you haven't seen that.
Go ahead, Nate.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen the announcement, the ESPN 30 on 30 on Magic Johnson, the announcement, I definitely recommend it. It's a great, documentary. I mean, everything he's done, So when he's got a track record like that, I just think the Dodgers are in good hands. You know, somebody else like, maybe like Isaiah Thomas with a different track record, and different, with the CBA and that things, I'm not ripping on Isaiah Thomas, but I just mean that Magic Johnson has a track record of everything he touches turns to gold.
TNT work, Doc, and an excellent analyst, no doubt.
Well, the thing that CBA thing, Isaiah said that was a situation where he couldn't have full control of that.
Oh, yeah.
Once he got into the NBA, there was guidelines and regulations that didn't allow him to put the kind of input and ingenuity that he wanted into that. But what happened when it went bad, the weight was put on Isaiah. I want to get back to you real quick, too, Nate B. Baseball. I'm thinking the Yankees are going to want some kind of way to keep Jeter in that organization. You know, two things I've said about Jeter. He wears number 2 because it's the right number. He's second to none as a player, as a person, as a shortstop. And he's everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything that Mickey Mantle wasn't. I don't see the Yankees blowing this one and letting him get away the way they let Chambers and Willie Randolph get away.
Oh, yeah. Derek Jeter's been in how many people? In New York City, I mean, you guys, I mean – no better than me, but New York City, Derek Jeter's been in New York City since 1995. Who has handled, I mean, at least from, I don't live in New York City, I've just visited and stuff, but from an outsider's perspective, I'm like, wow, who has handled, the New York City media or being in New York better than Derek Jeter? I mean, it's amazing to me, looking from the outside.
Professional athlete of all time.
Yeah.
Mm.
So,
the only one that comes close, Nate, to my opinion, as far as longevity and handling the media, maybe Mariano Rivera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. There's another guy. I mean, and there's not many. It's such a hard, you know, thing to do where it seems that way, you know, but he's been amazing. You know, he's done an amazing job of it, you know, and he continues to perform, you know, so, it just amazes me, you know, so I think that he should stick around.
It was the thing that Buck Showalter, when I spoke to Buck last year, who was former manager of the year, and Joe Torre, the two things that they hyphened on when you're talking about Derek was the ability to be invisible in the most high-profile video place in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like Derek Jeter, when he leaves the clubhouse, he doesn't exist anymore. You know, there's no traffic tickets, there's no drunk driving, there's no... you know, there's nothing inappropriate that you ever heard, read, or even remotely thought about Derek Jeter, Nate B. Baseball.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and that's amazing, you know, seeing that he's been there for so long with so much success, and he's outlasted, you know, a lot of people that have, you know, come and gone, you know, Joe Torre and, you know, a lot of other people in that organization, a lot of other players, you know, he's sort of, perhaps even like Alex Rodriguez comes in and here's Derek Jeter, you know, continuing to play well, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's something else.
I don't see Derek Jeter any more than I see Mariano Rivera.
Yeah.
In a coach's uniform, I see them both in the front office.
That's what I said.
What you could do with Mariano though, you could say, hey, is there any way you do like Koufax? Could we have you down in spring training, you know, teaching these guys?
They could do that like everybody else has done it, but they belong with a pinstripe suit and a briefcase. They don't belong with cleats.
What they're going to be doing, Doc, after their careers is actually they're going to be announcing. Jeter was made for it, and so is Mariano. They're going to be on some network
I think there's a lot to what you say there, because the sad part about baseball is those front office jobs, minorities don't get those jobs. I mean, you can't name no minority that has that job. So, I mean, I don't care how great you are. You know, I don't care who you are. Like I always say, when the smoke clears, you're just another, and you throw the N-word. Nate, I want to salute you and talk to you about the guy that has been inspiration to you, Mr. Harvey Farmer. You talk so much about that great thesis that you're doing. Harvey, the 5 o'clock lightning. He did the book on Yankee Stadium. He did the book on Ted Williams. I was looking at the book on Ted Williams. And did you know, in 1940, Ted Williams pitched, made his debut in pitching at the legendary Green Monster. And in 1951, when Monty Irvin, Hank Thompson, and Willie Mays was the first African-American all outfield in history of Major League Baseball in the World Series, when Monty Irvin came to the plate for the fifth time, he was 4-for-4 going for his fifth hit and had stole home. Had stole home in a World Series game. Can you talk about Harvey, what he's meant to you, and can you talk about your thesis about the great Roberto Walker Clemente?
Oh, yeah. Well, Harvey's written, you know, over 40 sports books. He did a great one on Ricky and Robinson, too, as well. You know, he's been my thesis advisor for my thesis on Roberto Clemente, you know, where I've basically just trying to see how people remember Roberto Clemente approaching 40 years after his death and examine what his legacy is. And also, I did want to mention about Ted Williams. You know, he surprised everybody at his Hall of Fame speech by induction speech by just throwing in there sort of that, you know, he can't wait for the day until
the Hall of Fame will not be complete leaders. Until they induct the players from the Negro Leagues.
Exactly,
And a lot of people thought that had Ted not spent the 3 years in the military and the other 2 years interruption, that a black player would have been Boston a whole lot sooner than Eli Plumpsy Green in 1959. And to validate what you're saying and to dovetail on that, because Willie O'Ree, the Jackie Robinson of hockey, told me that when when he broke in with the Boston Bruins, one thing he told me, he said, Boston was the right place for it to happen. December 26th, Okay, 1964, December 26th is a big day in African-American history. As Harold knows, December 26, 1908, Jack Johnson became the first ever black heavyweight champion. December 26, 1964, and my friend, the late, great Will Chamberlain, said, now, I always didn't agree with him, but I respect the man because Red Auerbach put out on the floor. He said, get out there. I got Willie Knowles at center. It wasn't that power nonsense. I got Zach Sands at Willie Knowles at forward, Zach Sands other forward, Bill Russell's in the hole. I got the Jones boys in the backcourt. The first time ever, five black players started, and where did it happen at? In Boston. So I'm thinking, Nate, if Ted's there,
yeah,
there's a very good, and you look at the speech he made, if yeah. Ted's there, maybe the Yankees are the last team to get a black player, or Boston is if the Yankees got Elliott in 55, maybe they do it a lot sooner. But I'm thinking, Nate, that if Theodore Williams is there those 3 years, and not the numbers he could have put up, but we have a black player in Boston a whole lot sooner.
Oh, yeah, it's very possible. I mean, you know, it's very possible. You know, who knows? I mean, Ted Williams wanted to win. You know, he just wanted the best players, you know, on his team. And I think that's very possible because he was a guy, you know, more about action, you know, sort of a no-nonsense guy, mm-hmm. you know, who walked the walk more than talked the talk. And but the thing is, too, the Red Sox owner, even though he was beloved by the players, was – you know, one of the more racist owners in Major League Baseball. I mean, a lot of the players loved him, but he was one of the most racist, you know, owners in baseball.
That was a reflection of Boston at the time. Just was a city that Harvey Araton wrote a book about, the selling of the green, mm-hmm. and all those terrible incidences happened to Bill Russell and all the black ball players who were profiled.
You talk about that, Dr. I, too, because Dr. Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Show, the channel Sports Depth of the show. You're right, folks. It don't get any better. This is a great collaboration. People, you're going to hear Lady A, Dr. I, Nate Mead Baseball, Dr. Sharp Dusty, Mel Cosell, Sea Wings, The Hoopster. It doesn't get any better. Now, and I know I'm sounding like I'm boasting. I am. They're the best people
it's
in the world.
Like a J. Arthur Wright movie, the doctor and
They're the best. And Dr. I, you know, and you say that, too, because, you know, in a piece that Frank DeVoy did this week, he talked about that. And I remember when the Nets were winning out in Long Island and they weren't drawing and the Islanders were, and they asked the guy, they said, well, how come you're coming to these Islander games, they're losing, and you're not coming to the world champion Nets? And he said, you know, white faces. And the thing that happened for years, people thought Boston was doing great, but Dr. I, the Bruins, used to always outsell the Celtics.
Yep. And look how many championships the Celtics won in a row. And look at all the credit you got to give to Red Auerbach, the Jewish guy smoking the cigar, who didn't see color. And look what look how many championships that brought in.
They won eight in a row. They won eight times in 10 years, and they won 11 times in 13 years. And if Russell doesn't get hurt, okay, if Russell didn't get hurt, I don't think the St. Louis Hawks win a championship. So you're talking about they would have won like nine in a row. They'd have run 12 out of 13 years. But you're right. And now that we got you here with basketball and hoops, I want you to jump in there too. Dr. I, you're not surprised. You talked about, now, you're not surprised to see that horde of Kentucky players leave, are you?
Of course not. It's what Calipari stands for, and you know, he's playing within the rules. And but the rules are the things that should be changed. A lot of people blame the NCAA, but it's the NBA Players Association that determines whether, you know, the one and done, I'll call it, and whether it comes to two and done, which I feel is the right way to go. It's up to the Players Association. It's nothing to do with the NCAA. But Coach Cal played within the rules, and I got to give him credit for melding a team of all-stars to play together as a unit and basically take away the individual for the good of the team. Because remember what Pat Riley says, if you got the disease of me, you ain't going to win. And, you know, you look at this guy, Anthony Davis, this guy who's, to me, maybe one of the greatest one-and-dones ever. You know, he's a guy that took 5 to 7 shots a game
So people only know half the story that he's one of the greatest defensive players in college history. Let me tell you, this guy's got point guard skills. And once the NBA sees that, you're going to see what this guy does. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. There's no injuries. This guy is something else to watch, and he's a great kid, and it's going to be tremendous watching him play in the league. Him and, you know, our big guy with Oklahoma City. I mean, it's great to see these young guys, and they have the really, really special kids, you know, kids you can admire, kids you can call role models. And, you know, my hat's off to Calipari and what he's done with these kids. So,
well, not only that, Doctor, I mean, we have to look at the fact that he was able to get, and Hoops, I want you to talk about that WNBA draft. He was able to get these young guys in such a short span of time to play team basketball. Is he overlooked at you know, his ability as a coach? I mean, he's won 30 games, what, 5 years? Nobody's ever did that. But is somehow he's sort of not given the recognition he should have as a coach?
Well, I think this should give him a lot more recognition. I want to include one thing, that the glue of that team was the senior. And the senior was responding to my opinion and Clark Kellogg's opinion. He's the reason they won the championship, because he played outstanding. Whenever they had any little problem during the game, he was the go-to guy, and he pulled them out. But back to Cal's coaching, Cal is a very good coach. I don't put him in the same class as Rick Pitino as a coach. And certainly, now that Larry Brown is back on the scene, my prediction is that not this year, but certainly next year, Larry Brown will be raising the, or cutting down those nets for SMU, because he's the champion of all these coaches. So, and if you ask Calipari where he learned the most, he learned from Larry Brown. And a lot of these coaches basically have learned so much from Larry. And Larry's back on the scene, and I think in a very good situation. And I think not this year, because the recruiting game is over, but certainly next year you'll see this guy in the Final Four.
I think Larry Brown, in my tenure of watching coaches, was really the best. I mean, Larry won wherever he went. The Knicks, okay. He's the only coach who won an NCAA championship in NBA. Hoopster, your thoughts. You concur? I mean, you told me that you said, I gave me a call the other day. Hoopster has to know. He's got his insight just like Dusty. Dusty goes down to the Bochina place. Hoopster goes down to the number hole, gets his in contacts. And you told me, hey, Larry's back. You weren't surprised to see Larry come back. And he's been one of your favorite guys too, right, Hoopster? Hoopster?
I don't know who's with us, Doc.
Oh, he was here a minute ago. He must have
called. Hey, let me say this, Doc. I'm talking about Larry Brown.
Larry Brown was coaching when they first got all the running water, okay? That's how long Larry Brown has been around, okay? I mean, you know, really.
Hey, no way. Larry Brown coached Dusty.
When the basketballs were made of leather.
No, they were red, white, and blue.
Gang, we okay, we got the Knicks coming. Siemens, I want to come back to you. And one of the things that was talked about Peyton and Dusty and Bill Cosell kept topping it. You know, he's going to distill. The next hit could be the last hit. Do you think teams are not going to be as determined against him? Are teams going to let up, or are they going to treat him the way they always treat him, in your mind, C-Wings? C-Wings?
Okay. Hello!
Is it C with us?
I thought C was too, but
let me answer that in favor of C if he's not.
The answer to your question is,
Are they going to let up? Because my answer to you is, are you kidding?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so either,
Doc.
Surely
you just, Doc.
Are they going to let up
because Peyton Manning is coming off an injury? When one good hit may take him out of the game for sure, and I'm going to have to worry about him. Are you kidding, Doc?
But you know what, Doc? If I could just piggyback on that, I think that I think that, you know, guys are just going to go out there and play, and whatever happens is going to happen. You know, I don't think and I don't think in Peyton's mind he's standing there saying, oh, you know, this is the last one. I think he's just that much of a competitor. Well, he will be out there. Well, he will be out there, and he'll be, you know, doing the best he can in every game. I really don't think he's going to be sitting there thinking about, oh, this is it if I get hit. I really don't think that. I think that, you know, he's just going to go out there and he's going to play. And I think that everybody's going to go out there and they're going to play. And whatever happens in the game, you know, throughout the course of the game is what happens.
No, I mean,
you should pick up his money and go home. Because he's going to get hurt and he's going to wind up in a freaking wheelchair. I don't care what anybody says.
I'm saying, Dusty, is more about the character of the man. I'm saying, I don't think he's going to be out there and be like, oh, well, you know, in the back of his mind, oh, if I get hit, this is it. I think he's just going to be out there as a competitor and he's going to play. Whether he's stupid or not, that's another question. But
I'm just thinking, this guy who's saying, out of respect for, it's just a question. Who's the you called me, Larry Brown came back. You want to surprise to see Larry come back.
No.
Has Larry been one of your favorite guys as a coach?
Yes, he has. Especially we did with Iverson in the 60s. Oh, yeah, he's always been my favorite. I would like to play for Larry Brown.
Really? Why?
Oh, yeah. He teaches guards how to play point guard. I never learned how to play point guard. I was to play small forward. And center. I like to learn point guard for Larry Brown.
Is Larry Brown defining
the man when you say that? I love it.
I'm telling the truth.
Is Larry Brown, for my opinion, the answer to my question is just, is Larry Brown a better coach than Phil Jackson?
Yes, he is.
No, I agree.
You know why? Because he teaches fundamentals, how to play the game correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My thinking is, all the teams that Phil Jackson coached, any good coach, he had talent there. Everybody talks about Phil's wins. Nobody talked about when Detroit ran roughside over them and they just got away from being swept when Kobe made that big jump shot. If Kobe don't make that jump shot, the Detroit Pistons sweep them, and nobody even talked about that. You know, Phil Jackson. It's funny because they said it about Larry too. You know, Larry has nothing to do him and Phil with the losing, but you know, Phil does have nothing to do with the losing, and Phil has never taken a team that he had to nurture.
And
every team he's had. I mean,
they had talent.
I had no problem. Okay, Mike, Scotty, BJ, Horace, Cartwright, y'all go out there. Okay, LA. Okay, Kobe.
Shaq.
Shaquille. I mean, come on.
Horace Grant.
Yeah. What's the story with the WNBA draft? Did they have that yet?
Yes, they did, yeah. The Liberty drafted girl from Tennessee, the center.
Mm-hmm.
And also I know you heard about Pat Summitt retired.
Mm-hmm.
One hell of a lady coach. Eight titles.
She retired. She got diagnosed, right? She got diagnosed with
it's more of a health situation than anything else, Hoopsa?
Yes, it is. It's, eight titles, over 1,000 wins. She had Tamika Hoslaw there on the squad. She had Candace Parker. She had a lot of great players. Eight titles, so, hey, God bless her. She's a hell of a coach.
Hey, what's your take on the whole thing that happened with Meta World Peace today?
That was stupid. He need to be suspended. Yeah. That was so stupid.
Can you give us the situation and update on that, Hoopsa? What happened with that now for the fans?
Ron Artest made a dunk shot. He ran down the court, pounded his chest, and he threw an elbow, hit my man on the neck, and he fell down, and they threw him out the game.
That was
uncalled for, unsportsmanlike.
He dunked the ball. He was so excited, and he pounded his chest. Taking a step down court, Harden was sort of leaning on him a little, and he swung an elbow like a lethal blow right in the area of the temple. And fortunately, he hit him probably a little below that. But if you get in the temple, Natasha Richardson died from something like that, a blow to the temple. So this could have been a lethal blow. And, you know, Ron Artest went into, I'll call it a zone,
that he didn't plan to be in, like Manslaughter 2, in effect. He didn't plan to hurt a guy, except he did deliver a vicious blow. Afterwards, it was like he was totally bewildered by what he did, because he knew in his heart that he didn't do it deliberately, so he was like totally dumbfounded. He had that look on his face like he had the incident in Detroit. The bewilderment right after the event took place. But
you know, the real question is, how much further is the NBA going to go with this guy, knowing that he has a track history that goes back to, before 2003? Of,
this,
you know,
that's the first.
Can I tell you something, lady? This is the first incident. He's been very calm when he came with the Lakers. This is the first incident.
Mm-hmm.
This ever happened with him.
And also,
that near riot.
Well, not only that, this was unintentional to a certain degree, and the Beer riot is not his fault. Dusty said last week, you know, the fan was the one that was out of hand in that.
Right.
I mean,
threw that beer on him.
The fan was way out of hand.
With that very strong center. Well, somebody helped me. His name was
Bo Wallace.
Wallace thought it was a cheap shot, retaliated, and that's what started kind of the whole thing from there.
And it wasn't even a hard foul. It wasn't that hard of a foul.
And the thing, Bo Wallace, to me, showed unprofessionalism. He showed disrespect, and he showed no kind of brotherhood. And then he punked out because when it smoked, you never heard no more from him. And he was the guy that and he suffered nothing. I mean that there was a chance, as Marion Borkin says, that the better man in you emerge. Like you said, it was no hard foul. It was part of the game, and he acted like a little sissy. And he showed no sort of respect or pride toward another African American. I mean, there was no need for that. He was the guy that was 100% wrong, and you never hear. And who was Bo Wallace? What he added? 4 points a game.
4 points a game.
4 points a game. What Hall of, you can't get into the kitty bitty YMCA Hall of Fame at 4 points a game.
I mean, he showed a lack of restraint as well.
Rainbow, so pause for the show. We're all here. Nixon and Hoopster. How far can they go? Like Dr. I has his.
Well, can I say something? Like he was saying, they got a chance to move to six because Howard's out for the season. So Orlando's in a lot of trouble. I think the Knicks can move to six.
Not enough games left.
I think they can make it to six.
Hoopsa, you think they're going to beat Miami? Come on.
Well, can I tell you something? I think they're going to beat Miami. Miami, they impressed me. They don't impress me this year. You know who impressed me? The West, Oklahoma City,
Clippers,
and San Antonio Spurs.
Yes.
Everybody forget about them three teams.
Oklahoma City's on.
I don't think people are overlooking Oklahoma, but I think Hoopster, Lady A, Dr. Igor, I think people are overlooking San Antonio again.
Yeah, right on the money.
Again. You know, no matter how many times they win, like, oh, they were lucky. Oh, Kobe was off. They never. And I think Tony Parker. I think Parker's playing the best basketball of his life.
He's on a chair.
And you can't ever forget Duncan. And you know, and they have a good coach. I mean, this guy has had a good hand out there too. Let's not get carried away. You know, I mean, he's had a good core of players. That's some great
Doc, consider him as the coach of the year. Don't be surprised I said that on the show.
Okay, now that I got you here, and Dr. I, and the rest of the panel, is LeBron the MVP?
I like Durant. I got him up there.
Dr. I, come on, Dr. I, talk to me.
I will go with Kevin Durant. I can't go because he's not even the MVP of his team. Dwayne Wade is the MVP of Miami.
Thank you. That's what I said. Yep. I agree.
I'm going to go with these guys, Doc. I'm going to say Kevin Durant, too.
You saw him in the All-Star game. Dusty, who's the MVP? Dusty, talk to me, Dusty.
Who's the MVP?
Mm-hmm.
Durant.
Harold?
Harold Weston?
Duran. Not LeBron.
Tweet him. Gotta tweet him.
Harold, who you like, Harold?
What, with the basketball?
Yeah.
I like Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And Mel Kelsell telling it like it is.
I'm all in, Dr. Durant.
Baby baseball.
I'm
going
to have to be
the
contrarian here. I'm going to go with LeBron. I mean,
all right.
Just his efficiency, I mean, is just unreal this year.
Hey, for a second you took your time there, Nate. I thought you were going to say Jose Reyes.
Jose,
he ain't doing nothing this year. He ain't doing nothing.
Oh my goodness, lady! Hey, lady! One thing we knew for sure, it wasn't gonna be Mark Sanchez. Did I say that?
Comeback player of the year. Comeback player of the year, Mark Sanchez.
Ah.
Wow!
Hey! You heard it here first, gang. You heard it here first. Doc Stevie, Sports and Depth on the Blake Rainbow Show, the channel Sports and Depth show.
Still got to pick up Steelers.
Hey, and one thing for sure, I know, he beat the Steelers last year. The Steelers are going to play the Jets this year, so.
And the Giants.
Yeah. And the Broncos.
One thing we can say is that the Jets got a shot with Tebow at quarterback. Doc Stevie Sports, they've got to take a break
right.
DocStevieSports.com, that's the site. By Sports and Depth, Trust in God, Sports and Depth, Artifacts Hall of Fame. Hit that site, and you got some questions. Hey, well, some of those great players are part there. We've got a wristband from Mark Sanchez. We've got the late. I think there's some boxing stuff here, too. As you know, I got my man, Harold Weston Jr. I look at a briefcase I had the other day, and I got a hoard of things. But what I'm doing now, I'm focusing on my Leroy Neiman books. And I've got a couple of them. I got three or four of them autographed by Leroy. One is about the world of golf, but one is Leroy Five decades. You know, Leroy Neiman will be 91 on June the 8th.
Wow.
Fourth coming birthday. DocStanleySports.com is the site. Take a look at it. Baseball-wise, you know, we were talking a little earlier, and I think one of the things I like is I have a four-card set signed by Al Kaline, youngest man to win a batting title. Reggie Jackson, three home runs in the World Series on three consecutive pitches. Pete Rose, the all-time hit king, and also Hank Aaron, all-time home run king for a right-handed batter. And we're going across the baseball, and as we maybe baseball pay a little homage to him.
Can I ask
really,
you a question?
What's that?
Is they going to put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame?
Who?
Pete Rose.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Well, no,
great question.
Okay, we're going to go with that one. Okay, I'm going to tell you something. Why, yes. We salute Jackie Robinson, 65th anniversary of Jackie Robinson, April 15th, 1947. The Brooklyn fans were wearing buttons that said, "We want Jackie." Jackie had his debut, played first base. And in 1997, the LIU hosted a forum where Jackie was honored by the National Museum, and they gave us a baseball, all members of the Met press, and it had a Jackie Robinson autograph on it. And I told myself, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get as many people who played with and against Jackie Robinson on this ball. And the first name above Jackie's name is Yogi Berra, who was a three-time winner of the MVP. You know, there was a 11-year period where from 1947 to 1957, a New York player won the MVP in baseball. There was 4 years where both players in baseball came from New York. There was a three-year period, 54, 55, and 56, where both players came from New York. 56, Don Nicholson Newcomb became the first pitcher, an African-American, to win the Cy Young and MVP.
Doc,
and
ask you another question.
Hold on, Hoopster. Let me get this name. Go ahead, Hoopster.
Yeah, that year when Jackie Robinson stole home on the Yankees, was he out or
hey,
he was safe?
Hey! Now that we asked Yogi Berra, Francis Ventura asked Yogi the other day. Yogi said he was out then. He was out now. But no, Jackie was safe. Look at the baseball. Some names that really surprised me. Roger Craig is on here.
Bobby Thompson is on the ball. Eddie Lopat is on the ball. I got both Joe DiMaggio, Duke Snyder's on the ball. Don Drysdale's on the ball. Bob O'Limit is on the ball. Stanley Frank Musial is on the ball. I'm looking at the other side. Ralph Houk, Whitey Ford, Don Mueller. Just a unique group of players who played with and get Jackie Robinson. And one of the great lines, too, I remember sitting out in Shea Stadium, and I saw some Jackie Robinson quotes, three of the most profound of his quotes. One is about him. It said, Jackie Robinson didn't come to play. Jackie Robinson came to beat you. And then Jackie said two quotes of his. The first one, a life is not important except the impact it has on another life. And then there's that classic line that reminded me so much of all the great players that ever played this game, in any game. Melly Mays, stickball legend, Michael Jordan. Above all else, I hate to lose. And you lose out if you're not here every Sunday with me and the crew here on Blake Radio, Doc Stanley Sports up on the Blake Radio Network. And just once again, DocStanleySports.com, my trust in God, Sports in Depth, Artifacts, Hall of Fame. And we touch kind of every sphere. A lot of people talk about, we know a lot of times we play a little Miles Davis here in the Sports in Depth, Trust in God, Artifacts, Hall of Fame is a Miles Davis autograph album. And also we have the Queen of Soul, legendary Aretha Franklin, Dizzy Gillespie, and that very close friend of Dr. J's and became a friend of mine, Grover Washington Jr. Doc Stanley Sports in Depth.com. DocStanleySports.com is the site. Sports in Depth is the show. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll get back to basketball, baseball, football, and everything else. Sea Wings, okay. Can the Giants go back to the Super Bowl?
It's kind of hard to repeat in this today's NFL, but anything's possible.
But they got a tough schedule. So
they lost a lot of key players.
How much do we fault this on the salary cap? Like you would think I got Dr. I got Sea Wings, I got Dusty, I got Mel Cosell, I got Nate B. Baseball, I got a great team. Why am I not going to pay these guys? Why am I not going to keep these guys? Why am I not going to try to win? How much is this salary cap, the culprit behind this?
I mean, it's changed a lot of the sports. I mean, you even see in basketball, too. You had a team like the Chicago Bulls. You have the Lakers, who won a lot of championships. And, you know, they just seem to get rid of the key players. At that point, even the Jets, you got rid of Braylon Edwards. Now you're looking at him again. What's the sense of getting rid of him? But it's the salary cap. They have to come under the salary cap. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with these big names and big contracts, sometimes the axe has to fall on those key players that the team needs. That's just the way that the salary cap system is set up. Mm-hmm. I think it had in mind, or the purpose of it was to try to not have these dominant teams. Like, you look in the NFL, you don't have those dominant teams like the 49ers that won X amount of championships, the Cowboys, the Steelers. You haven't had that in the NFL in years. You know, you just don't have – baseball is probably the closest sport to that. I mean, you look at the Yankees each year, they acquire these big-name players. They pay a lot of money for them. They always pay the luxury tax. But in sports like baseball and football, you know, you don't really have those dominant teams like you used to. I mean, you have good teams, but you don't have those dominant teams like that anymore. Theory is behind that.
Can we blame the salary cap some-wise? Or can we count blame it? Does that play a big part in this?
Of course. You know, they have to get those teams under the salary caps. And you have some politics involved as well. You look at OC Urimura, who has contributed to the Giants' success with the other players, Justin Tuck. He's due for $3.9 million on his ancient contract he has. The Giants have to re-sign him to a new contract. Hopefully that happens sometime before training camp, or you could have another controversy. If he really wants to go after the money, which That's what I think all the players are for.
But,
you know, when they play in these sports, it's not like they get a big, retirement package. They have to make as much money as they can,
right,
especially
now
in football.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Football.
Hey,
you know,
the average
lifespan in football is roughly 3 years.
Yeah.
You got to make that money now. And, you know, Dr. Guyton, I've been touting, as you know, that the Giants need to sign down to a long-term contract.
Yeah,
and
man,
lock
go
them
ahead
up is Jason Pierre-Paul. Thank you.
JPP. No, Cruz. Don't forget Cruz.
I was talking defense at the moment, but if you're going to speak offensively, of course,
well,
Cruz, but he's going to be looking for big
Cruz
money
right now.
No, he want to raise. He want to raise,
and he deserves one.
He want to raise.
Yeah,
he's still
under that rookie contract. I think he's due. Last year, he made roughly $400,000 or $500,000,
mm-hmm.
Something
yeah,
to that.
425.
You know, so.
That's Dusty's boy running like a purse snatcher.
$425 last year, he's due $550 this year, and that's chump change.
That's right, Dusty. In today's NFL, the hot dog guy gets $400,000.
But it, you know, the thing here, it's the rookie contract. I mean, now what about if he didn't have a good year? I mean, unfortunately.
Well, let me tell you something, Doc. Rookie contract. Mm-hmm. Eli Manning won the first Super Bowl for the Giants, and they gave him a $130 million pack. What are you talking about?
Go ahead, Dusty. Dr. Sharp.
Go ahead.
Lois. Go ahead, Dusty. Go ahead, Dr. Sharp.
Well,
I like
you.
Your style, baby. Go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah, he's the dude, ran up and down, gave an adrenaline rush.
Broke
the
all-time season record.
Running like a purse snatcher.
That's right.
And he kind of put the nail in the Jets' coach.
He's the first Giant who ran, what is it, for over 100 yards or something.
Broke the all-time season receiving
record
yards. And once again, Dusty, like right on cue, and Dusty, I'm glad I gave it extra money.
Preacher, brother.
But it's always amazing how there's always a problem to
how
play
shocking
to pay a black athlete. It's amazing. It's just always amazing. I mean, you know, and then I forget, like Don King said, only in America. I mean, it's amazing.
Well,
I mean,
let Vince Cruz go over to the 49ers, too. I don't care.
Wow.
There were some headlines this week. Where
In the background, the greatest songwriter of all time, Smokey Robinson, this weekend, will be at Lehman College. You know the hits, man. And the biggest hit in the history of the Miracles was Tears of a Clown. But the other big hits were there. Here I Go Again, Tracks of My Tears, Ooh Baby Baby, Mickey's Monkey, and the first great hit in Motown history, Shop Around. Smokey Robinson, this weekend at Lehman College, the legend that lives, following the greatest disco artist of all time, Gloria Gaynor. This weekend, Smokey William Robinson at Lehman College.
And bring your platforms. Bring your platform shoes and your picks with the fist.
And an afro.
And
your gross mutton chops wig.
And your bell bottoms.
Smokey Robinson, you know Smokey wrote. They got a whole album. Temptations sing Smokey. They say Smokey would like be down in the studio, man. And oh man, that's a nice. Let's do a song about a doorstop. Let's see anything happen. But he wrote My Guy for Murray Wells, My Guy for the Temptations. My Girl for the Temptations. The first big hit by the Temptations, he wrote The Way You Do the Things You Do. And then, you know, he's one of the few guys. Who did I lose here? I lost six. Who's? Okay, I'm sorry here. I had somebody on. Okay, 646-46-1078. Who am I there? Daddy Hoopsa? Well, I lost somebody there. I'm sorry. I had you.
It's me. I'm still here.
Okay,
hello?
Who's 646-467-1078?
Hello?
Hey, who's that? Who's this?
This is Milo.
Huh? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Milo's in town, gang. Dusty, say hi to Milo.
Hey.
Milo,
hey,
lives.
Mr. Milo, where you
Milo,
been, stranger?
Chicago's in the house. Chicago's in
Milo,
the house,
Chicago?
Y'all.
I just got in with my wife, and I heard you talk about Smokey Robinson. Actually, I saw Smokey Robinson at the Grammys, and in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, I met Smokey Robinson at the Grammys in 2009. A wonderful person. So.
Oh yeah, he's a great guy. So you got a chance to meet him, huh?
Yeah, got a chance to. Yeah. A great guy, great performer. Actually, he was a guy from what's his group from Detroit? Because they were honoring some from Detroit. I forgot the name, but they were honoring a group from Detroit. But
a group of the Contours, the Temptations, the Miracles.
No. Hold on 1 second, because I was there with my wife. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. He's going back to the main source to get the information. Dr. Stanley Sports is up on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow. Is that man from Cleveland still here? Did he leave us? Cleveland, you still here? Okay, I think Cleveland left us, but we got Chicago. We lost Cleveland, got Chicago. Sea Wings and Lady A said they were going to leave early, but they're still hanging in there. So that's great to have them here. Dr. I is back with us. He'll be here with us every week, too, with the Hoopster, as we move more and more into the NBA. Basketball. Dr. I, how much does the salary cap play in the detriment of the situation in the NBA? Dr. I? Okay. I'm losing them.
Hey, Doctor, like salary cap just wreaks havoc in every sport. Let's just cut to the chase, okay? Salary cap wreaks havoc in every sport.
Telling it like it is, Mel Bobo.
Well, let me ask you a question here. Wasn't these salary caps agreed to by the owners and the unions and the ball players?
You know, that's
so
a great point.
They're both culpable. They're both as guilty. Their hands are just as dirty.
Right.
Salary cap.
You're right.
You can't complain about the poor guys being cheated out of money because they voted on it.
They agreed to it.
Hey,
yeah.
You jump them to the pool, you get your butt dirty. So
there's
you got to deal with it.
And there's a salary basement in, you know, a lot of leagues, to, you know, minimum, like the NHL and the NFL. If you didn't have a basement, you know, like they do, teams like Cincinnati and Mike Brown, who is a very, you know, cheap owner, to be frank. You know, and makes a lot of money, you know, by not paying guys. He'd probably field an even worse team if there wasn't, you know, a
Wait,
basement.
Milo, you left us? You know, Nate, you bring a great point because people talk about the Black Sox scandal. Well, you know, it wasn't so much, you know, people think that the name was introduced and infused with the scandal. No. The Chicago White Sox were called the Black Sox because Comiskey was so cheap that he wouldn't wash the uniforms after every game. They had to play in uniforms three, four
games
in a row.
That's disgusting. Ew.
Yeah. So they had to play the game, so the uniforms were already dirty. That's why they got the name Black Sox, because Comiskey wouldn't wash the uniforms after every – they had to play 2-3 games in a uniform, and then everything in the stadium he owned – the sodas, he owned the beer, he owned the Cracker Jacks, the peanuts, the hot dogs, everything. And then what he would do is he'd say, okay, Nate, you win 20 games, okay, you get a bonus. Dusty, you hit 300, you hit 347, you're going to get a bonus. Doc, you hit 30 home runs, you're going to get a bonus. Okay, I would get the 29 home runs, he would bench me. Doc, Nate would get the 19 wins, he wouldn't pitch anymore. Dusty got to 347, he wouldn't play anymore. He made sure that if you got to the level that you had to get paid, you would not get there. They got the name the Black Sox because he wouldn't wash the uniforms, and the uniforms were dirty, and the fans started calling them the
Doc.
Black
Sox.
Come on, Doc. Are you serious?
Hey,
that's so disgusting.
Yeah.
Hey, Doc, I'll say one thing.
Hey, I'll say one thing about Arnold Rothstein. I bet they'd have had clean socks.
A dirty underwear.
we lost. I hope he calls back. I don't know what happened to our man. I'm looking for him to get back with us from Chicago, Milo. As we were saying, I thought we were going to be shorter. Dr. I, we have the Dr. I. He dropped off on us, too. Sometimes, you know, the people that call him
on
location.
Well, Doc, I'm going to get ready to go.
You're going?
Yeah, I got an early day tomorrow at work.
Okay, just say you're leaving on location. Say goodbye to everybody and say goodnight
all
to Harold. Right. Go ahead.
Goodnight, Harold.
Good night,
everybody.
Good night.
Talk to you guys.
Bye,
see you next week.
Bye, lady.
All right, bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, hey.
Okay.
Bye,
so
hey.
You,
hey,
Doc,
quick question for C before you hit him off. I know he's going soon. Hey, C.
CT, but hold on, CT. It's CT. CT, but hold on, CT.
Hey, C. Mel's Blue Jr., MetLife, next year is WrestleMania. See, are you inclined to go after the performance of this year? We know that you were there live.
I already issued my name on the seat where I want to sit.
That'll probably be the last time you sit there. You don't get thrown out.
But one quick thing before I go. All eyes will be on the draft, not only for the two top quarterback prospects, but it will be a lot of talk about the sanctions put upon the New Orleans Saints, having lost their second round draft pick as part of the punishment for the.
Who's gonna get it? Who's gonna get that draft? That pick?
You know what? I'm not too sure about that, but. They're gonna get hammered, and they're talking about Jonathan Vilma is on the radar too.
Yeah,
allegedly
getting paid that money, that $10,000.
Offering $10,000 to someone to go out.
Hey, Steve, where is this Main Street with Vilma when he was with the Jets? Where is all that? Where was it when he was a New York Jet? The job and the dice of the.
Could play the 3-4. That's what happened. Yeah, get out of there.
I don't know. It's like adding milk to coffee. You take out some of the potency when you come to New York. I just don't know when these players are traded into New York, for some reason, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, not too much of hockey that I follow, but it seems to be these big superstars, when they come here, they seem to get watered down. They seem to get lost.
Right.
Is there a possibility to see that they can get a bona fide pass rusher in the draft?
I think they'll get a wide receiver.
A bona fide pass rusher.
They're going to get a receiver.
We definitely need that pass rusher. There are plenty of holes to fill in the Jets.
Offensive line.
Offense and defense. I mean, you have Aaron Maben. He's really the only pass rusher that the team has. I mean, if you really want to be relevant, we need a big pass rusher. I've been saying that for the past couple of years. We need that. We need safety. Wayne Hunter, I mean, he's been terrible. I think he allowed a lot of that in Baltimore when me and Doc went down to cover that game. It's terrible. It's terrible. We need someone to protect that line. So whoever it may be, hopefully it's Sanchez, throughout the season and the starting quarterback, you need somebody on there that can fill that gap in that one-on-one situation to protect that quarterback. We need him. I mean, Sanchez, like I said, we didn't even see him after the game, after the Baltimore game. I think he was hurting.
See that new coordinator, offensive coordinator is more of a ground and pound guy, which would be more Tebow-ish.
Ask your question?
Uh-huh.
What I was saying, looking in the paper today, I heard y'all got the top three guys y'all looking at on the radar.
Well, possible that the Jets.
Yeah, Melvin Ingram from South Carolina. You got another guy, Mark Barron
from
Alabama. And the guy, Michael Floyd from Notre Dame. I like that pick. I hope y'all could get him. He's a tough wide receiver. I like him. I used to watch him play at Notre Dame on Channel 4 a lot. Good receiver. 6'3".
Yeah.
Good size on him. I hope they should pick him.
Maybe going out back after Braylon Edwards. You shouldn't have never got rid of him to begin with.
Yeah,
I mean,
this guy,
he was problems off the field.
Yeah, we don't need him.
You pay guys to play on the field. Screw that off the field nonsense. The one thing about Ty Cobb, devout racist, known member of the Ku Klux Klan, teammates didn't like him, opposition didn't like him, bases loaded, somebody got hit. Ty Cobb, when he retired from baseball, he had won a triple crown, okay? He had the most hits, the most stolen bases, the highest lifetime batting average, the most batting titles, and he hit 400 more than anybody else. You pay a guy for what he, you know, it's always amazing, too. You know, you don't want to pay a brother, and yet you know everything he does negatively outside the clubhouse. And yet
yeah.
I've never heard Clubhouse 14, Patriots 3. But, you know, a white guy, you know, he doesn't have to ask for extension. You automatically give it to him, a.k.a. Tom Brady, a.k.a. the quarterback from the Dallas Cowboys, Troy Aikman, when Emmitt Smith had to sit out, and they just automatically gave Aikman. You never hear anything about negatively about these white guys. I mean, we wouldn't have heard about the CIA guys, I mean, the Secret Service guys, if Obama wasn't the president. They'd have kept it hush-hush if Bush or somebody else. But now, do you want to run this story and say that, wow, it's under the Obama administration? I mean, you know, you pay a guy for performing. If he performs, if you want. But I'll never forget what Gary Ward told me. I'll never forget what Gary, he said the Yankees want to win with a certain type of player. And white America wants to win with white athletes. Baseball is just about devout of African-American baseball players. And I remember we had a guy, so to be in the show, he said even baseball is not even drafting African-Americans of a certain complexion, that there are no dark African-Americans no more. You know, if you ain't light, then you're looking white, you know what I mean? Boom. I mean, some of the things that made Derek Jeter so accessible, so acceptable, is realize that Derek Jeter is of a nice complexion. You know, it's a catch-22 here, you know, because, you know, when you want to come at him, he's a brother, but when you don't, but, you know, and listen, Derek has always professed to be black. So, I mean, don't get it wrong. But the fact that he's the complexion that he is has not hurt him, and more importantly, it's been advantageous to the Yankees. Willie Randolph was voted the captain of the Yankees as a co-captain with who, a pitcher? How do you put an everyday player, a co-captain with a pitcher? Unless the pitcher's name is Koufax or Gibson, you know what I mean, or Spahn or Gooden. But how do you make an everyday player, the guy who never made an error in postseason play, the co-captain with a pitcher? Was Lou Gehrig a co-captain with a pitcher? Was Thurman Munson co-captain with a pitcher? You made Willie Randolph co-captain with a pitcher. So my thing, this clubhouse stuff, jam it. I mean, I never understood this. You know, I mean, jam it. This nonsense, you know, well, I want to spend more time with the family. Is the family going to pay you $18 million a year to play? I want to spend more time with the, he's a cancer in the clubhouse. Really? So the clubhouse is going to win today? The clubhouse boy is going to pitch the last inning? You know, it's these so-called statements of grandeur, statements of validity. The book. What's the book? I'm going to bring in Nate B. Baseball because he's a right-handed pitcher. Okay, the pitcher to a right-handed batter, but this guy's hitting .472 against Nate. Or am I going to wait and let Nate to come in and pitch the left-handed pitcher who's batting .072 against Nate? But the book says, what book? Who wrote the damn book? Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake. We don't ever rainbow store the channel. Sports Network for the show. Go ahead, C-Wings. C-T-Bo. You still there, baby? C-T?
Before I leave, it was just this week.
I'm leaving tomorrow.
Harold, real quickly, C-Wings. Harold. Okay, give us. We need the three. Okay, Hopkins and Dawson. What about? How do you see Mayweather and Cotto. And
that could turn out to be a good fight, Doc. Mayweather and Cotto. That could turn out to be a real
Rudy,
good fight.
I'm gonna have you here, Harold. Give me Mayweather and Cotto.
Cotto comes like Cotto did his last show. He fights anywhere with that mental mind like that. I give him a shot of beating Mayweather.
I don't think he'll get
the decision because of where they're fighting at. But I
right.
think that the people will see that, you know, that he did good against Mayweather. You know, everybody thinks Mayweather's all that. Mayweather don't throw enough punches. Cotto, he fights the type of fight Cotto likes, you know what I'm saying? And I think Cotto feels more comfortable fighting him than he did fighting with Manny Pacquiao. And so, basically, I think that I give Cotto a little shot if he does what he did the last show.
Harold, who's a better trainer? Freddie Roach, Buddy McGirt, or
or Roger Mayweather? What's that?
Oh my God!
Was that A B C D? Is that none of the above, Harold?
You know, I'm a person like this. Okay, I give credit to trainers when they take a guy from zero and make him into a good, great champion. And I don't, I can't. You know, Freddie did good with Manny Pacquiao. He came him around. Buddy did good with the kid from Jersey.
Got it.
And Floyd did good because he had Mayweather.
Right.
Now those are the same, the glory, all of them, right? But they ain't did nothing with nobody else. So you can't say they're great because they did something with one person.
Okay.
So they did it with, you know, they made two or three guys champions under their wing. Hey, then you give them glory. I mean, you know, Emmanuel Stewart, Gil Clancy, and Emmanuel Stewart, even Customato. I mean,
Eddie Fudge.
They made champions from zero and made
Eddie,
them champions.
Eddie Fitch.
And they had two or three of those guys. That's how come you make them great trainers.
Angelo Dundee.
That's how you look at the whole situation. So, with them doing one guy, and I've seen them in other championship fights with other guys, and they fail like a big dog. So, you can't put them on no pedestal right now. Look at Emmanuel Stewart. Emmanuel Stewart took kids from Detroit, made three or four champions out of that coup over there, put Detroit on the map. Detroit was always on the map, but he put it really on the map with Tommy, Bill McKenzie, and a couple of more kids he had. But my point is that's where you judge a guy of, for greatness.
How good was Hel McKenzie?
He was fair. He wasn't great. I mean, he was fair. He had the right opponent in front of him to win the championship fight and everything. He was fair. I like Bernard.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. Why, Harold?
I mean, he's younger. He's not afraid of Bernard. What Bernard showed him in that situation with his arm crying, yelling and screaming, he just put more confidence in this kid. And this kid is bigger than Bernard. He really is. And Bernard, it's a different type of fighter now. It's going to be a different type of fight now. He knows, when you have that first tryout with a guy, it's the unknown. But this time, there's no unknown to him. So Bernard is going to have a lot of trouble with this kid. And he's a southpaw, and that's the other problem Bernard's going to have.
Right. Yeah.
The legend that lives, the first and only African-American matchmaker in history of Madison Square Garden, the only welterweight champion from MSG, and our all-time champion, Harold Weston Jr. Harold will be back with us next week. Harold, we'll talk to you tomorrow, baby.
All right, buddy. Y'all take care. Everybody.
A pleasure, Harold. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
All right, man. Harold Weston Jr. Yeah. So we still got Dustin with us.
You know, I wanted to tell you something that Harold, if I can get in this point briefly. You know, Doc, we've had this discussion before, and I'm piggybacking on what Harold said because I said this before. If he can, if Cotto can set the pace, and make Mayweather fight, as Harold said, he doesn't draw a whole lot of punches. He fights when he feels like it, pretty intermittently, okay? And guys kind of let him get away with it and let him dictate the pace of fights when he wants to fight. As I said, and Harold just, basically said also, if he can make Mayweather fight, and not only when he feels like fighting, but make him have to fight and keep the pressure on him, be in front of his face all night long, he can win that Rumble.
Who, Cotto?
Cotto can win that fight. If he makes Mayweather fight, not just when Mayweather feels like fighting, but makes him fight, makes it tough, makes it a war, he can win that Rumble. He can win that. Mayweather's fighting a bigger guy, Doc.
I have three schools of thought here. First of all, Mayweather's better. He's just simply better, okay? Cotto is shot, in my opinion. And number three, I don't think to a certain degree that if they thought this guy could beat Mayweather, that Mayweather would fight him.
Guys never think a guy can beat them until they lose.
There are certain guys, Dusty, and Dusty can tell you too, there are certain guys. Hold on, I got Dusty. I got
Yeah.
Melko say Nate Baseball is the Hoopster still with us? Okay, I got 365-2893. That Dr. I come back?
No, it's Sea Wings.
Oh, you see, okay, Wings, okay. See,
okay.
No, okay, the CT, you're CT now, CT Bo, baby. yeah, I mean, I'm going to say this. I've said this before. There's only three guys that were unbeatable, okay? Three, I wouldn't, you know, I like Mayweather. I don't, there's nobody out there I see that's great. Maybe Mayweather is working on it. There's nobody I see out there that's great, okay? There's only three guys that were unbeatable, okay? Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, never lost before he got stripped, never lost a fight, undefeated, okay? Nobody could beat him. Nobody could beat him. Too big, too strong, he beats everybody. He's him and Jim Brown or the Mack trucks with the speed and mobility of a Porsche. Number two, Walker Smith Jr., a.k.a. Sugar Ray Robinson. 77 over, he got his first title shot. 94 and 0 before he lost his first fight. Never lost a fight as a welterweight. Retired the first time, 132-2. Roberto, Manos de Pedro, Cholo Duran. 72-1 when he came in to fight. I'll never forget it. He came in at 72-1. Ray Leonard came at 27-0. Ray Leonard left 27-1. Duran came out 73-1. Those three guys were unbeatable. Howell's right.
Doc, you have to understand.
Let me.
You
lost
a non-title fight too, Doc. Back in the day,
I don't care what he lost.
Hold on, back up.
And that non-title fight he lost was a great move on his part. First time he lost, first time he got knocked down. The guy was in a car accident the week before. And I understand
well,
he was 72-1.
You don't step in the ring, Doc.
Rooney, what did Harold say? I love this, Rooney. Harold, you don't mind about the sport. Like Harold, in those days, you fought. You would die. You were fighters. You fought.
If you fight, there's no excuses.
It's not like baseball where you don't play because you got a cold or you got turf toe. And I'll say this: what happened in the rematches?
I don't hear you.
The rematch
killed him.
Killed him.
But listen,
he lost. And understand this. I understand. I'm talking about when they go in there their best. Because Dusty knows, good luck. How many times do guys go in there not at their best? Salvador Sanchez against Azuma Nelson. And I asked Azuma, was Sanchez the best fighter you ever fought? He said, I can't tell you. So what do you mean? Because I took the fight on 2 weeks' notice. Very few guys go into the ring 100%. I'm saying when they're at their best, when Ali was at his best, when Duran was at his best, when Ray Robinson was at his best, all you were doing is going to pick up a payday and you would go as long as they take you. You know? I mean, you're coming at me at one loss. He came in that fight 72-1. He's the only one. And Marion Borkin says that's why when you talk Hagler, Hearns, Benitez, and Duran, he's number one because he beat the best Ray Leonard.
May I say this, Doc? You're my mentor in this business, so I'm going to give it to you in just a sec, Doc. Just let me finish this with Doc really quickly, okay?
I know
the panel's probably going to disagree with me, especially you, Doc, but for my money, and I got to hear you, Doc, I really got to hear you, but for my money, I thought he won that Rumble in Montreal, to be honest with you. I thought he beat Duran in that first number, in that first toe-to-toe.
I had him ahead. Well, I'm
going
to tell you something else, too. Hold on. I'm going to tell you who had him ahead. You did. I'm going to tell you something about that fight, too, though. You know, Duran didn't go into that fight 100% either. You know, to get Ray to fight his fight, okay, because the one scorecard had the fight even. So the way it was going to be, it would have been an even fight. I thought Duran won the fight. Maybe not by a lot. Just like I still feel Ali won the first
fight.
It
was a close fight, but Duran won the fight.
Mm-hmm.
He hurt Sugar Ray. He almost knocked him out.
He said, Dusty, that I would have went after him. But
yeah.
I wasn't 100%, and I didn't want to spin myself. So he said that I didn't want to go out there, try to knock him out, and didn't have it. Because if Duran was 100%, you're right. Ray Leonard gets knocked out in the second round. And a lot of people don't know, after that fight, Ray Leonard was going to pack up and leave. Ray said, I made enough money. This ain't for me. And you know, there's still questions about the second fight. And, you know, listen, Ray Charles Leonard was not a great fighter. Ray Charlton was a great, great fighter. Here's the bottom. Ray Leonard beat every great fighter of his era. Okay.
Greatest welterweight I ever saw, Doc.
Huh?
Greatest welterweight. I'm saying that I saw. I'm not talking about that I heard of. I said
Rooney,
that I saw.
Rooney,
greatest welterweight ever saw, Doc.
Rooney, if I had to be stuck with Ray Leonard being the best ever, I got no problem with that. Okay? Like I said with Jordan, if I got to be stuck with Michael Jordan, I got no problem with that. I think it's awesome. But, hey, Ray Charles Leonard, you know, the thing about Ray, Ray had heart, man. And I tell you this, if him and Tommy, if that second fight, and Ray said he thought Tommy won it, I heard, if that second fight went 15 rounds, Ray knocks out Tommy again. Okay? Ray Leonard got knocked down in that fight. That's the greatness of a fighter. What do you do after your old goes, as Marion Boykin would say? What do you do after your old go, Marion B. Boykin, Black Foundation, Brina Brother? What do you do? What do you do at the camp? That's why you like Ray Robinson in that first fight. He goes face down against Tommy Bell. Face down. Gets up.
And he gets up and he fights back. But
let's
get back to the current business here that we're discussing here.
What's that?
Mayweather and Cotto here. First of
all, hold on. I got boom, boom. Hold on. Sea Wings, are you still with us? Sea Wings? Okay, go ahead, Dust.
Sea Wings is still here.
Look, okay, so go ahead.
We're looking at these two fights. First of all, he wasn't selected. First of all, Floyd, from my research, and this is what I tell you, Doc, I researched. I don't talk out of the top of my head with nonsense. Floyd owes a vote of thanks to Miguel Cotto. And I'll tell you why. Because when Pacquiao said, I ain't taking no stupid $40 million with no pay-per-view, you know, let's do a winner-take-all, and Floyd refused. He wants all of the pay-per-view money. Miguel Cotto,
Pacquiao offered him a winner-take-all?
Pacquiao offered him a winner-take-all. Floyd said no.
Okay, now, where'd you get this research from? I mean, my thinking, would Bob Arum allow that? Really? Dusty, I'm listening to you. Would Bob Arum allow that?
Bob Arum has nothing to do with this. This is Pacquiao and Mayweather.
But if that's the case, how can
Pacquiao
the fight have been made?
Told him directly. If you want to pay me a lousy $40 million, and you want to keep the pay per view, let's do this. Let's do winner take all. But the breakdown is that the winner take all was 70-30. So Pacquiao says, I know I can beat you. So if I win, when I win, I take the 30. I mean the 70. You take the 30. Mayweather doesn't want that. He wants all of the money, guaranteed pay per view. That's why this didn't come out. If
Dusty, he was willing to, if he lose, take the 30, but he won all the pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. He was willing, the whole 100% package included, naturally, the pay-per-view. The wording is, Pacquiao says, okay, why don't we do winner-take-all? Winner-take-all means that Mayweather wins, he gets 100%. But Pacquiao's winner-take-all was, no, 70-30. At least I get something out of it. Floyd said, no good. I'm not paying you any of the pay-per-view. And he said it in one of the interviews last night when I saw that. He said,
okay,
I'm
now,
not giving
my question,
anything.
Doesn't Arum take all the pay-per-view from Pacquiao?
No, Arum has nothing to do with this. I keep telling you, man. But
that's not what I heard. Hold on, gang. We gotta do. Okay, we're gonna have to do mic on, lights off. Doc Stanley scored up with the Blake.
No, I gotta go. You didn't let me finish. I gotta go, man, because I got a heavy day tomorrow, so I gotta go.
We
table this till next week anyway. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll be part two. Doc Sandy Sports Depth on the Blake, but every Rainbow Stone Channel Sports Depth for the show.
Okay. Later, folks. Take care, everybody.
Okay. All right, okay. All right. We'll be back with, we'll be really close to Pacquiao and Cotto. So we'll get more to that. We'll talk about Pacquiao and Mayweather. Live your life today, have your stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, more urgent question is, what are you doing for the service of others to make you pay for your space on Earth? Smokey Robinson is leaving college this coming Saturday. Larry Hardesty, can you tell everybody goodnight for us?
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Late Beat Baseball and Malcolm, so hold on just a second. We're going to talk a little bit about...
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network.
Okay, Mel Costello, we got a few minutes we're going to kill. Looking at everything across the board, you said Cotto has a shot. You're not going
against Hopkins. Have to make Mayweather fight, Doc. Have to make him rumble. Have to make a war of it. What you have to do, basically, Doc, is get him out of his comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Then we could see a fight. If you can get Mayweather out of his comfort zone, don't let him consistently give you the shoulders, like call it on defense. Mm-hmm. Don't let him consistently fight in spurts when he feels like fighting. Consistently cut off the ring. Consistently make him fight. Consistently go to the body. Then this could be, and you're going to laugh when I say this, Doc, fight of the year.
Hey, I got another question for you. How does Mayweather do against Tommy Hearns?
I think Tommy knocks him out, Doc.
How does Mayweather do against Tyra Weston?
That's a very interesting fight, Doc. A battle of boxers. Mayweather likes to think of himself as a boxer puncher, and I guess so does ours. You know, that'd be very interesting, Doc. I would love to have seen that rumble. Right now, I probably have that as pick'em. Although I think that overall, Harold is probably the tougher, grittier guy, you know, being from the old school and the guys that he's fought, you know, just based on, you know, opponents. I would give the edge in speed probably to Mayweather.
Mayweather? Okay. Mayweather Duran.
No, I would wait, Doc.
They're playing under 147.
Well, either way, Doc, 35-47, even though I know 47 is the natural for Mayweather. Mm-hmm. I like Duran, Doc. I mean, he's from the old school, tough, gritty. I give Duran the duke in that, even going up to 47, yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you this question.
If Duran that fought Ray Lennon in Montreal fights Mayweather, he beats Mayweather.
And Mayweather and Ray Lennon.
Wow, Ray's my guy. That's the greatest one to
come on, no question about it.
Ray's my guy, easy, yeah.
Nate B. Baseball, I'm going to let you run. Who's your all-time? Who's the greatest player in the game, in your opinion? You're a baseball guy. Who's the greatest player to play the game? Everybody says it's Willie Mays. Is Willie Mays the greatest all-around player to play this game, baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think Willie Mays is when you look at his career. And And one thing I just hate is when people criticize him for playing too long. I just think that's absolutely stupid. I mean, if you're still – I mean, even though his last couple of years there, I mean, whatever. But if you're still contributing to the team, you know, if you're still helping your team, even if you're not as good as you used to be, what's wrong with that? I mean, what's wrong with a guy playing – what's wrong with a guy liking his profession and sticking around as long as you're contributing?
I mean, the best thing is, you know, that whole thing really was – Stonehead. They tell a great story about Stoneham Rooney, too. Hank Aaron signed a contract. If I'm correct, Willie Mays is the first guy to sign a 2-year deal. And they brought Stoneham called Willie in. What's going on? He said, Willie, Hank Aaron just signed a deal that his contract, he makes more money than you. I don't think anybody else should make more money than Willie Mays, so we're going to tear your contract up and give you a bigger contract. And Mays said, no, Mr. Stoneham, you know, that's all right. You know, thanks very much, sir. You know, this is now in picking my all-time outfield. My outfield is Willie Mays in center field. I mean, I hit the note. Clemente is my right fielder, and I think off of what he did, steroids or not, I think Barry Bonds is the left fielder. That's Bonds, Mays, and Clemente is my outfield.
behind the catch, behind the plate. If I got to go by guys in the league, I mean, I'd like everybody talks about Rodriguez. I like Campy. I think people forget what Campy could have done and would have done had he. Campy could have been probably the first four-time MVP. Just beat out Duke Snyder when he won that other one. But Josh Gibson is a guy I put behind the plate. Eddie Murray's my first baseman. I mean, guys, say what you want. Only guy with over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, 3,000 base hits, most grand slams, 1-2 Gold Glove. He's my first baseman. Jackie Robinson, second base with Roberto Alomar also on the team. If you start a defensive shortstop, it's nobody but Ozzie. But the guy all around wise, and I love Derek, but it's got to be A-Rod. Only infielder to do 40, 600 home runs. He's got to be the guy.
Yeah.
He's got to be the guy, in my opinion. Third base, you know, everybody says Smith. Brooks Robinson bat 267. I don't, you know, that's great. I mean, I'll bring him in late in the game, but 267 lifetime, that's not a third base bat now. There's Eddie Matthews, there's Chipper Jones, there's Mike Smith. The guy I put in third base, Frank Robinson.
Frank Robinson.
Third base for me. That's my third baseman. If I got to do a staff, if I got to do three left-handers, three right-handers, the left-handers is easy. It's Koufax, it's Spahn, and it's Colton, right-handers. You know, Steve has got to be there. Marisol's got to be there. The guy that I like the young Gooden, and my long man. If you know, just to show how I like I said, I'm after all above all. I hit my long man out of the bullpen. I got two guys. One guy is Gibson. Well, I'm wrong. Wait, whoa.
Yes, I made a mistake.
My pitching staff is Seva, Marisol, and Satchel Paige. I'm sorry, Miss Paige. My two long guys is Gooden and Gibson, and my closers is Mariano and Eckersley.
Yeah, yeah.
An all-star team of all-star teams. Let me ask you a quick question, Doc, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you too, Nate. Yeah, I want you and Doc's opinion, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
This calls for kind of an assumption on you, but I just have to ask anyway. Barring the injuries, if you could foresee this, barring the injuries, where would you have put Junior Griffey?
Nobody goes in center field but Willie Mays. I mean, the thing about Willie is, and Nate, I'm jumping real quick about it. See, what people forget about Willie is this. Willie Mays played in Candlestick Park. So Willie Mays hit 10 balls a year in a 13-year career that would have went out any other ballpark. So now you add that to the 6'6", that's 790. That's 790. And I'm not talking about the 2 years in the military. That's another 100 home runs. Okay? So Mays hit 790. And, Willie, he hit 51 and 41 his first 2 years out of the military. So, let's be conservative and give him 50. But you're talking 840 home runs. You're talking 800. Willie Mays only hit 200 home runs in Candlestick Park. Out of 660, he only hit 200 home runs in Candlestick Park. If Mays don't play in Candlestick, Aaron said himself, if Mays didn't play in Candlestick, he'd got the 3,000 bases before me. Roberto said only if Willie Mays could play in Candlestick Park. If Mays don't play in Candlestick, and we're being conservative, we're saying 10. The year that Mays hit 52, he breaks the home run record by Roger Maris if he's not playing in Candlestick. He hit 52 home runs in 65. If he's not playing in and we're being conservative, 10 balls a year. We're talking only 10 times. About 40.
Well, Doc, it's pretty much conceded, not by everyone, but by many baseball experts. I mean, Willie was the greatest all-around, you know, ball player possibly to ever play the game.
Well, to me, it's got to be. I mean,
if
you take every great player and you put him against Willie, there's something. Roberto, Willie hit more home runs than Roberto. DiMaggio. Mays led the league in stolen bases for 3 years old. Willie stole more bases in 1 year than DiMaggio stole his whole career. Better base stealer, better arm. Mantle, better arm, better fielder, better base stealer. Ted Williams, better arm, better fielder, better base stealer. Babe Ruth, better fielder, better. People say, well, you know, the Babe could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher. Well, how do we know Willie could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher? How do we know Ted Williams could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher? How do we know DiMaggio could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher? How do we know Mantle could have been a Hall of Fame pitcher? You know, we don't know that. They didn't pitch. You know what I mean? So we can't say that. My thing is, you know, you didn't have the greatest players. But, I mean, Griffey, if Griffey doesn't get hurt, Alex Rodriguez wouldn't have passed him the other day. If Griffey don't get hurt, he's a guy that could be right up there with Barry. There's no question about it. You know, the sad part with Griffey is that he had to leave the American League. And I remember when the Mets made a play at him, I asked his dad, I said, is it true that you know? He said, yeah. He said, they did. He said, but they called us at the airport and gave us 15 minutes to make a decision.
Oh, wow.
Called us while we were at the airport and gave us 15 minutes to make a decision.
Yeah.
So you're not serious about it. But, Nate B., your crew and why? Who's your first baseman?
Well, regarding Griffey, just to compare him to other players of the era, going back, Willie Mays is on his own level, but to compare Griffey to players of his time, it's impossible to speculate, who's taking steroids and who is not. But from all accounts, Griffey was completely clean, and I was in Cincinnati, while he was there, and. Griffey of his era was the closest thing to the natural, because a guy like Barry Bonds, and I love Bonds, I think he's the best that I was born in 84, and Bonds was the best I saw. The difference is Griffey in Cincinnati, Bonds, by all accounts, put in more work in the training, weightlifting. I mean, I know that included steroids, evidently that included steroids, too. But Griffey, is more of the natural, So I think if you're going by natural talent and you take away the steroids,
no performance enhancing drugs, no performance, at least assumed performance enhancing.
Barry's never been. I mean, the thing though, with Barry, the little Barry was as good as the big Barry. The Barry Bonds before the allegations had won what, 3 MVPs?
Yeah.
He had done 30. I think only his dad has done 30 more than he has. He's the only National Leaguer to do the first National Leaguer to do 40. Seriano did.
Yeah.
But I understand esoterically.
Yeah.
Just showing up at the park and doing the little things, infield practice and stuff, not going down to the weight room like you're right. So many players did, and I understand why they do. It doesn't change the power, but you're right.
But Barry Bonds. Oh, sorry. But Barry Bonds, I mean, the steroid stuff, I mean, it's right now I'm so tired of hearing of steroids stories. It's like these college NCAA violations. I don't care. I mean, it's not about, to me, I'm just tired of hearing about them, like, right or wrong or whatever. It's just non-news to me anymore. Maybe that's wrong on my part, but I'm just sick. It's just not interesting to me anymore. But Barry Bonds, just watching him, in my era, he was the best. He was the best. And if you look at the teams he was on, I mean, he won Jeff Kent an MVP. If you look at Jeff Kent batting
ahead
Barry Bonds instead of behind Barry Bonds, Jeff Kent was nobody behind Barry Bonds. And Barry Bonds took the Giants to the playoffs when his protection, when the guys sitting behind him were an old Benito Santiago, an old Reggie Sanders. I've never seen a baseball player single-handedly. I know it's a team sport, but baseball is not a sport, everything's a team sport, but baseball, it's hard for one guy to really take a team on his shoulders. And that Giants team that was 5 outs from winning World Series was basically Barry Bonds and Jason Smith as the ace, and not much else. I mean, not much else. And he took them on their shoulders. And one year he had like almost 250 walks.
He had the 200. He had 103 walks, 103 intentional walks.
Yeah,
and I remember me and Eddie Murray, the great Eddie Murray, the legendary. We were talking one day on the phone, and he said, just in inverted, he says, Mel, he says Barry only sees 2 strikes a game, but he's right on them. The 2 they throw, bam, bam. Buck Showalter walked in with the bases loaded.
Yeah,
walked in with the bases loaded, and you're 100% right. I mean, here's a guy who this was a staggering stat when he was breaking the all time. Intentional walks record. When he got to 74 intentional walks, that was more intentional walks than Willie Mays had the last 10 years of his career.
Yeah.
Okay? And then when he got to 78, 79, that was more than Hank Aaron had his last 10 years of his career. He shattered the record when he got to 103 by 53, which the original record that was owned by Willie McCovey. I still think that the American League record is 34 by Ted Williams and John Loder, but you're right. And it was when Dusty Baker flip-flopped Kent from fourth to third that Kent won the MVP. Because at the first part of the 21st century in the National League for the first 4 or 5 years, the only players who won it was Giants, and Kent won it because, like you said, Nate B. Baseball. Dusty Baker flipped and put Kent in front of Barry, and they started pitching to Kent and not Barry.
Exactly. And another way to evaluate it is if you read what other players say, you know, during that time, and players are the best evaluator, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't care about all the stuff that the media and fans care about, this or that. I mean, a lot of players did not personally like Barry Bonds, but they still said he's the best. They had no reason, they had no personal reason to, you know, say he's
yeah.
the best.
Yeah.
But just as they all respected how well he played, you know. So,
well, Nate, that's because a lot of people, I mean, that's because, Nate, I'm sure you, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but
yeah.
I'm pretty sure you and Doc would probably concur. The guy was a Hall of Famer. I mean, Hall of Fame numbers and Hall of Fame plays before any of the allegations ever came into
yeah, exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
He went from being Hall of Fame to absolutely all world, if you're talking allegations. But the guy was a bona fide first ballot Hall of Famer before these allegations.
Exactly.
Good. And Doc Stanley Sports Network, the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports in Depth is your show. This is Mike on Lights Off. It always happens. We say we're going to have a short show, and we wind up having a longer one. Nate B. Baseball. And we finally got him in the dugout sitting down all by the water cooler here, some Gatorade and pumpkin seeds. And Mel Cosell came down. He's got a large bottle of Gatorade, but he's holding one of those chocolate Snicker bars. A piece of bubble gum there, Rooney.
Indeed.
We'll be right back here, get back out of the dugout. And we're going to talk to both of them in a minute. Don't move. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake with an Epic Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Network, the show. We're doing a little mic on, lights off, and we're sitting out here in the dugout. Some highlights to talk about. Knicks are in the playoffs. And they are trying to get the sixth seed, hoping not to get a hold of Miami. And, well, the interesting items, big fights coming up. Look at Ricardo against Floyd. Pretty boy, Money, Mayweather. This coming weekend, Bernard Hopkins against Chad Dawson. And then after May, Cinco de Mayo, when you have Cotto against Mayweather, we go into June, Timothy Bradley against Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao. So those are the three big fights forthcoming. Yankees will be continuing as Alex Rodriguez is now heading toward Willie Mays. He's hit 631 home runs, surpassing his old teammate, the Major. Look back at one time, they had a hell of a team. They had Bueller, Edgar Martinez, Ken Griffey Jr., and Alex Rodriguez. No four men have hit as many home runs over a span of time as they did out there in Seattle. Barry Bonds, Joe Morgan said he's never seen a player get more respect as the opposition gave Barry. And, you know, like you said, a lot of guys may not have liked Barry, but, you know, Nate B. Baseball and Mel Cosell, he was highly respected, highly revered. A lot of allegations, his attitude changed because of so-called possibility of the drugs. But, you know, but he talked so much of how his dad, Bobby, you know, would just train him, practice him. Certain pitches. I mean, Barry and Chris Chambliss talked about, you know, because Barry choked up on the bat, and Chris talked about how he wished other guys would. And I remember when I was in the Little League, that was one thing you did. You choked up on the bat, and if you didn't, when you got two strikes on you, you choked up on the bat. You know, you didn't want to make out, but you didn't want to strike out if you made an out. And Chris Chambliss told me he wished that more guys would follow Barry's suit of choking up on the bat. And as you said, Nate B. Baseball, and dovetailed by Mel Little Cosell, is that, you know, Barry was not liked per se, but Allah in the same mode of Ty Cobb, just a respected, revered baseball. I read an article where a lot of guys said, one, he should be in the Hall of Fame, and one guy said, and people forget, you know, Barry Bonds is the oldest man to win a batting title, taking that title away from Ted Williams. One guy said Barry Bonds was the best hitter ever in Nate B. Baseball.
Oh, yeah, and the thing, too, is he would have threatened having – if he didn't get sort of blacklisted or whatever happened,
yeah, he was blackballed.
You know,
yeah.
You know, and then he would have threatened being the first player ever to have 3,000 hits and possibly 3,000 walks, you know, if he would have got to play, you know, several more years, which would have been amazing.
And Eddie Murray told me, we were talking, Eddie said, he said that ballpark in Tampa Bay is tailor-made for bat. I mean, would you, and we know this thing of not picking Barry was collusion, yeah. racist. But if they wanted to win, and the year they went to the World, had they had Barry Bonds, they would have won the World Series. Had they took Barry, their attendance would have been crazy. Imagine Barry Bonds as a DH, and the fact that he said that, I mean, Woodbury hit 762, so he needed another 38 for 800 home runs, right?
Yeah, and get them. Yeah, I have two teams that would definitely have taken Barry Bonds. One is Tampa Bay, and this is just, and the other is Oakland. Because they both have a history. Both of them, you know, took swings at Manny Ramirez. And Oakland, you know, took an older Frank Thomas and Manny Ramirez. And, you know, Oakland's, you know, really, you know, smart, too, with their management, even though. So those are two teams I really think would have taken, you know, swipes at signing him.
But you think there's no question that Barry was blacklisted?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was, he could still play. Even, you know, he was still hitting like 260 with a lot of home runs per at bat. You know, his last year he wasn't playing as often, but
exactly,
when he was playing, he was still very efficient. A lot of walks, you know, and he would have been a great DH, perfect for a DH position.
Great. It's amazing the way the Giants treated him after all he'd done for them. And Willie Mays being there and part of the organization. But, you know, those things happen, Rooney.
Hey, well, Doc, I mean, as you and Nate said, they basically treated the Barry Bonds, persona non grata. I mean, so basically, that's all she wrote, you know, as far as, you know, that's concerned. But, hey, he has the numbers. Whether he actually gets inducted into the Hall of Fame with the Rodgers is, I mean, obviously we don't have to argue the numbers. The fact of the matter is, though, will they say the numbers were tainted or not, which I guess will be
he's the only guy with over 500 stolen bases, 500 home runs, the all-time home run king, the one-season home run record, the most home runs hit by a left-handed batter in the season, the most home runs hit by a batter, period. The most home runs hit by a left-handed batter. It's just I've said this about Mark McGwire, and they'd be baseball. And really, I've said, you know, I don't understand this thing about anti-McGwire. McGwire hit 49 home runs as a rookie.
Yeah, exactly.
49 as a rookie. And so if he was taking anything, big deal. So instead of hitting it over the 410 sign, he hit it against the 435 scoreboard. Big deal. It's still going out the ballpark.
Yeah, and if they have a thing against these guys, why isn't there a thing against Bud Selig, who enabled all this? You know, they knew this was happening. That's the difference between baseball and football. Look how football cracks down on concussions versus how baseball, when they thought it was to their advantage, you know, they knew the steroids was happening, and they just sort of almost encouraged it by basically not doing anything, you know, during
the
90s.
Well, you know, the deal was they had – you know, remember that big strike, and a lot of people were turned off, and fans were kind of slow to come back. And so they figured, hey, whatever, you know, whatever we need to, you know, get back in the thick of things again to be the number one spectator sport or whatever. Then so be it. Like you said, all you had to do is look at some of these guys and see the change and the weight gain.
One manager told me that, you know, does the guy get older, hit a ball further? But you brought up a point, too, Rooney. Doc Stanley, Sporting Depth on the Blake, the Network Rainbow, so the channel Sporting Depth of the show. We're here with the mic on and lights off. We'll be closing pretty soon. But, you know, you bring up a good point. But Ozzie Smith told me, he said, and this was about a month before the strike. He said, Mel, we got to strike. The way this thing is structured with the owners, we have to strike. We're going to strike. Now, people forget. Matt Williams, Ken Griffey Jr., and Frank Thomas were going to hit over 60 home runs. They were going to break the one-season record by Maris. All three of them were. And maybe a shot at 70. Greg Maddux was going to win 20 games. Barry Bonds was going to do 40-40, maybe 50-50. Tony Gwynn was going to hit 400. Them guys didn't want to strike.
That's right.
I mean, you know, people act like the players didn't want to strike. The owners, if I'm right, Wayne, you tell me, the owners had lost in the court, and the players had actually won. They locked the players out, Rooney.
Hey, Doc. It was like this year, a lot of ball players in the NBA didn't want to strike either. I mean, hey, it's one thing to talk strike, but when you're making big money and the first of the month, the 15th, whatever, those checks stop coming, I mean, guys start grumbling when you're making. I mean, you're talking big money to basically play a kid's game, something that you're one of the best in the world at what you do. And a guy started to get a little, kind of ticked off. I mean, a lot of guys that really didn't want to strike this year in the NBA. You know, those checks stop coming, you're making huge dough. I mean, you know, come on. I was actually saying many, many moons ago, Doc, earlier this year, that, hey, these guys better cut the best deal that they can and go back to playing basketball. These are years that you can never get back of your career.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too, Nate. People, the media painted a whole different picture about that strike thing. Players didn't want to strike, and the owners were wrong. The courts had ruled against the owners, Nate, B. Baseball.
Yeah, the thing is that the baseball, what they always have to watch out for is that they basically, going back years ago to the Oliver Wendell Holmes court, is he wasn't, even though he was known as a really good justice or whatever, he was really against antitrust laws. And so his court somehow ruled against all logic that baseball was not interstate commerce, even though games are broadcast across state lines, teams travel across state lines. And ever since then, baseball, you know, has had antitrust exemptions. And courts since then have, because a lot of the justices being baseball fans and a lot of justices not wanting to rule against baseball as it's tied in with Americana, you know, have not upheld that ruling, but have ruled stare decisis or whatever that, oh, it is how it is, you know, because it's been this way, we'll keep it this way. And so, but, you know, when baseball tried to retract Montreal and Minnesota, the Minnesota, you know, senators got involved and said, hey, you guys got this antitrust exemption, you better watch out because we're not going to, you know, stand up for this. So baseball, you know, is not always going to have the courts on their side anymore because they have this illegalized monopoly that is illogical, you know, the owners do. And so they always sort of, I think the players in all sports have more leverage than sometimes people realize, given that football does not have the antitrust exemption that baseball does, but they have a partial one that was granted by Kennedy, I think. So,
really?
Yeah, they have a partial.
President Kennedy, huh?
Yeah. He
wow.
granted sort of partial. It's not as full as baseball's. I don't know the details because I don't know. You know, I'm not a lawyer or anything like that. But baseball has like a sweeping one, and then football has a partial one. But you know, a lot of people, you know, still think, wow, you know, these sports better watch out because these exemptions that they have don't make a whole lot of sense. You know, because you know they have legalized monopolies that nobody else, you know, has basically in the United States.
Once again, on Sports in Depth, you heard it here first. Nate B. Baseball, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was the one who gave football a little antitrust move. And the thing here, I heard too that Ty Cobb was going to be banned from baseball. They wanted to ban Tyrus Raymond Cobb from baseball. Chuck Klein won the Triple Crown 1 year, gentlemen. Can you believe it? With 28 home runs? Won the Triple Crown with 28 home runs. 28 home runs. And they wanted to ban Cobb from baseball. Something happened. And Cobb threatened the owners and told them, oh, yeah? You banned me, and I'm going to push for the government to get you guys under that antitrust nonsense. You know, he said, you guys got to lose it. No. Did you hear that story, Nate?
Oh, I did not know about that, but that's interesting.
I heard this story where they wanted to ban Ty Cobb from baseball.
Uh-huh.
Ty told, yeah, you son of a gun, yeah? Okay, what are we going to do? Yeah. He said, no. And I believe he was suspended for a year.
Interesting.
I believe he was suspended for a year. That's something, you know, I guess that's some research we'll both do for next week.
Oh, definitely.
But Tyrus Raymond Cobb, he stole 96 stolen. Ty Cobb... Kuba Bell talked about the Negro League team was playing against Detroit Tigers. and Cobb and Harry Hilgman wouldn't play. Cobb had come from Cuba and got thrown out 16 out of 17 times by a black catcher down there. Now, I'm not playing against these guys. That's the story that I heard. He was also on another team, and he was Cobb was upset. You know, he was the third best hitter on the team. He said, oh, my goodness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But 367 lifetime, and more importantly, the big thing about Cobb, his batting average would be never obtained, but the fact that Cobb stole home plate, and I got to check out the numbers, but nobody has stole home plate. I mean, I think Cobb stole home plate like 50, 60 times.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's got, you know, there's no fact that Cobb was a great player. You know, it's just that his attitude, some of it was sort of he saw his mother shot, his dad shot, but it was a known fact that he was, like I said, when Ty Cobb retired from baseball, he was baseball's all-time hit leader, had the highest batting average, had won the most batting titles, had the most stolen bases. I believe he was had the most scored runs and was second or third in RBI, and had done something that Babe Ruth had done. Ty Cobb won a Triple Crown. Yeah, I look at the Triple Crown numbers. Ted Williams lost the Triple Crown on the last day of the season. In fact, I think Ted Williams lost it on percentage points. I think he had that same batting average, but it's one of those 3-4-2 nonsense. Mickey Mantle has the highest batting average. No. I think because Shoeless Joe Jackson lost the batting title. Rooney, can you believe this? I know Nate be baseball knows it. Shoeless Joe Jackson hit 400 and still didn't win the batting title. Still didn't win the batting title. Mickey Mantle won the triple. Ty Cobb.
Okay.
Tyrus Raymond.
Hey, Doc, let me ask you something. You and Nate, in the modern era,
mm-hmm.
has anyone stole home more than Willie Mays?
Willie Mays? Well,
in the modern era.
Rod Carew tied the record he stole home seven times one time back in the '80s. He stole home seven times one time back in the '80s.
Is that a lot of art, Doc? No one dares even think about trying to do that nowadays.
There's no question. I mean, and I've heard home they say third is easier to steal than second. And home, they tell the story in Santurce, Puerto Rico. Mays and Clemente, the year before, had won the championship for Santurce by hitting back-to-back home runs to win the game. The next year, Sal Marciano, keep it where it is, the great sportscaster, told me that one year game is tied, Willie Mays on third base, Willie Mays stole home to win the championship. Yeah, it's a lost. You know, the game was different, though. You know, the dead ball era, that's, you know, Rooney, you single, Nate baseball single, okay. Runners at first and second. I bunted. Yeah, second and third. Okay, next guy grounds out the first, hit the single. We got two runs. The American League, too. I mean, you didn't have a lot of, for the longest time, you know, that's made Cobb so daring. You know,
yeah.
Guys are the one going from first to third. Single to right field, man at first base, single. Runners at first and second. Nobody was doing first to third. That's the kind of stuff that Jackie
bought. Am I right in that later on they began to call that National League type of baseball as opposed to the three-run dinger in the American League?
Well, supposedly a lot of teams, if Nate can dovetail me, you know, they tried to play the Yankee style of baseball where, you know, Joe Gordon would single and Rizzuto would single and Jody would hit the three-run home run.
Yeah.
You know,
type of baseball, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the kind of stuff they do. National League, I mean, Jackie turned all around because the first year in the league, Jackie led the league in stolen bases. First year in the league. And you understand, you know, like 27, that was a lot of stolen bases. 27?
Yeah.
I mean, Willie Mays led the league 27, 24. Then he had the astronomical number of 40. 40 stolen bases?
Let me say this, Doc, and Nate, if I may. Now, this is when Jose Reyes was at the top of his game, I'm playing in his prime this year, when he was just unstoppable. That's the type of baseball that was exciting as me as a writer and fan that was exciting to watch. The guy would get a base hit, single to first, steal second, steal third, and a long fly ball, and he comes in, and you have a run on the board.
Well, I totally agree.
That was a lot of the style that Lopez induced with his 1959 Go-Go Sox. Aparicio, single to center. Nelly Fox at the plate, foul ball, low outside. There goes Aparicio, throw to second, he's safe. Nelly Fox, single to left, here comes Aparicio, he scores. You know, that Go-Go Sox, you know, or line drive, first and third. But, you know, Aparicio would get on, led the league in stolen bases 9 times. So he kind of brought that back, which was a little upsetting to Casey because the Yankees had dominated, had won the 5 times in a row, and you know, everybody was playing that Yankee baseball, the long ball, Manuel Maris, Howard Skourin, and here come the
but
Go-Go
Sox. But you
know,
Doc, when you Doc, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know something, Doc, when you put a – when you – and then I'm sure you'll concur, you know, that can put a hell of a lot of pressure – on a baseball team when you know that if you walk a guy or if he gets a single with less than 2 outs, that 8 out of 10, this guy's going to score one way or another.
Well, it's amazing you said that. And I want you, I'm going to bring up, you and Nate keep talking. I got good point. Good point, Winnie. Keep talking.
No, well, I was just going to say, Nate, that, you know, you can put a hell of a lot of pressure on the opposing ball club. I mean, we just gave the scenario. I mean, if it's not a base hit, then okay, you walk a guy, you know, a base off ball. He's still second. He's still third. Next thing you know, a long fly ball, made it, it's 1-0.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, one, it's exciting. I mean, two, it's good base. One, it's exciting. Two, it's good baseball. And I think one thing that the, like, in the post-strike when they, you know, went to all the home runs, you know, and they kind of encouraged it. I think that's one thing that baseball lost, and I think that was a mistake by the owners because there were so many home runs and there were so many pitching changes because the pitching was so bad and it was all home runs that by the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, if you're at a baseball game, you're not watching baseball. You're just watching relief pitchers warm up, which, you know, isn't exciting to do, you know, as a baseball fan, just watch relief pitchers come and warm up. But when you have the type of baseball with Jose Reyes and these other guys, you're watching, you know, guys on base. You're watching it be, you know, a guy on third base with one out, and you see if the guy can hit him in. There's much more tension built, I think. It's much more interesting. It's like football, you know, you have a third and four. You know, are they going to get the first down? I think it's much more interesting.
And not only that, Dave, but you know what? You know the difference as how things change as during the course of time. You know, and when I was younger, Nate, and growing up, if a guy pitched, I don't know, say 5 innings or 5 2/3, gave up, I don't know, 3 runs on, I don't know, 8 hits, and went out, we were like, man, guy pitched a lousy game, man. Guy gave up 3 runs, 5.5 innings, 3 runs already. We're going to lose this game. Now, Nate, that's considered a quality start.
I know, that's ridiculous. And, you know, a lot of these players that are, a lot of these pitchers that are, you know, that aren't that great, I think they should give a lot of their money to the sports writers that keep on making up these stats. Like, quality start, hold. I mean, how much money have guys made from the stat save? I mean, you can come in, you're up 4-1 in the ninth inning, and all you have to do is win the game, and that's called a save?
Guys have the nerve to give up, and then to give up 2 out of the 5 3 runs that almost tied it. I mean, a guy, like you said, will be up 4-1, wind up giving up 2 runs, wind up winning 4-3, or better yet, hey, Nate, and even worse, Nate, wind up giving up enough runs to tie the game. So the ball club comes back, and their half of the inning goes up, say, a 5-4 if you've already given it up, and he wind up getting a win, which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and the best relief pitcher gets to come in the last inning for the save. I mean, it used to be, and it should be, that if you're the best guy in the bullpen, I'm going to bring you out in the most important part of the game. That might not be the ninth inning. That may be the eighth inning when there's 2 guys on and the middle of the lineup's coming up.
Or it could be in the seventh inning. And, you know, and you look back at the Goose Gossages, you look back at the Sparky Lyles, the Dave Rigettis, the Hoyt Wilhelms. A relief pitcher was just that. You came in relief when relief was needed right then and there.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Get out of here,
Dr. Nate, when did they get to this rule when the closure could only basically, unless you want to get 4 outs and, okay, bring him out 2 outs in the eighth, but when did this thing come when the closure had to come in the ninth? Like you said, sometimes the game is on the line and it's not the ninth inning yet.
These things have been constructed, it's just, and Nate can give us that. You know, I was looking at you while we were talking, and we were talking so much about Ken Griffey Jr., and we were talking about Barry Bonds, and there were some things. One scout, as we know, Nate is doing that piece on Clemente, and after Stan Musial, Roberto Clemente is the best all-around ball player I ever saw. And this was a quote, I believe. I placed him slightly above a Willie Mays, and Clemente could throw even better than Mays. He was more accurate. Hank Sauer, San Francisco Giants scout in 1952 MVP. Many great thoughts. No, nobody's better than Willie, but Clemente was just you just can't say enough about I just don't think anybody ever is going to be a greater right fielder than Roberto Walker Clemente. It's just, you know, it's just that simple in a nutshell. I was looking at something, I guess this book, and there's some quotes or different players. When you're a base dealer, you cause things to happen. The pitcher worries about you. The catcher knows you're there, and infielders know you're there. You can do a lot of things to the defense, which you just talked about, Rooney.
Yeah, all you had to do is look at Reyes and see the havoc that he caused. You know, a lot of the time this year, Doc. Well, please go ahead. I'm fascinated, you know, of what you're saying in regard to this.
Yeah, there's some great lines here. You know, they can say, "What's the best way to pitch to Stan Musial?" That's easy. Walk him, and then try to pick him off first base. I know my uncle used to say. They said, pitchers used to say, you know, it's hard, it's, you know, that crazy stance that Musial had. They said, how can you pitch to a guy like that? Look like he's hitting at you, peeping from around the corner. And you know, we look at Jackie, given his role as a trailblazer for the most significant change in the history of Major League Baseball, the most important in the history of American society. Some have said, easy to overlook how great a baseball player Jackie Robinson was. And it's right. I remember I got to argue with a guy, and we were talking, and that was you, Rooney, when Mad Dog made the comment about that he thought Jackie really got into the Hall of Fame due to the fact of being the first black player. And Francesca told him, no, dog, you're wrong. And I remember addressing the Mad Dog and said, first of all, how many second basemen? A lifetime 300 hitters. And
not only that, Doc, but not only that, Doc. But when you think of the absolute unbelievable pressure, and I don't just mean, you know, your regular baseball, I don't want to make out pressure. I mean, you know the type of pressure we're talking about. The kind of play under that kind of cloud and that kind of bona fide pressure at every bat. And every fielding play that comes to you. I mean, Doc, man, you talk about draining. You know something, Doc? I can't think of another athlete, and correct me if I'm wrong, and you chime in too, Nate, if you can. I can't think of another athlete playing his sport under that kind of pressure, with the possible exception of the Lewis Schmeling fight having that kind of pressure on an athlete.
Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Griffin Network, Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Depth Show, Mike on Lights Off, Nate B. Baseball, and Mel Howard, Joe Sell, Rooney Smith Jr. I talked about that great year that Gibby had, you know. Despite 9 losses, Gibson's 1968 season deserves consideration as the greatest ever by a pitcher. For the season, he posted 22-9 record, completing 28 of 34 starts and throwing 13 complete game shutouts. During one remarkable three-month period, Gibson pitched 12 shutouts over a span of 18 starts and won 15 consecutive decisions. Incidentally, he allowed more than 3 runs in only 2 of those losses, and twice he lost 1-0. And Bonds had made a statement about Griffey, and while I'm looking it up, Navy Baseball, you know, we've talked to everybody here. History. You did tell us, now, you're originally from Pittsburgh, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, born in Pittsburgh and bleed black and gold.
Mm-hmm. Bleed black and gold. Yeah. Okay. And you're doing the thesis on Clemente?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And how'd you run into Harvey?
I'm getting my master's at Dartmouth College, and he was teaching one of the classes, and so he became my thesis advisor, and just between Roberto Clemente and his background in sports, and it sort of was a perfect fit, you know, for him as my thesis advisor. You know, Roberto Clemente, baseball, his background. So it was just kind of a perfect fit because I had to do something Pittsburgh. I mean, personally, I had to do something Pittsburgh for my Pittsburgh sports related. So it all sort of came together that way.
You know,
Diane Curtin, the greatest. I'm sorry, Doc. Just kidding. I know you're a baseball guy, but since you said that you believe it, hey, is the Iron Curtain the greatest? Is it the greatest or among the greatest football defenses you've ever seen, Nate?
Well, I was around Iron Curtain. I wasn't around for it, but. Personally, in my mind, you know, I'm biased, but I definitely think it is. Because, I mean, they had one of the 2 years in between the Super Bowls when Rocky Blyer and Franco Harris got injured and they didn't win the Super Bowl. They had, like, shutouts in, like, four out of their last seven games. And another thing is what a lot of people don't realize, you know, there's a lot more history written on baseball. But the Steelers, one of the reasons they were so great in the 70s is because of the Pittsburgh Courier was one of the, along with the Chicago Defender, you know, were the most prominent black newspapers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired as a scout one of the reporters from the Pittsburgh Courier to scout black colleges. And that's where they got players like John Stallworth, you know, and other players.
Black
colleges.
Green.
Yeah, and they became – the dominant team of the 70s because they were one of the first teams to start getting players from black colleges that other people didn't know about. Like, okay, everybody knew of Lynn Swann from USC, but people didn't know of John Stallworth, you know, as much who went to Grambling State, I believe. And so that's one reason they became one of the dominant teams.
Dominant powers, yeah.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing that doesn't get talked about a lot, you know, or we talk more about, you know, baseball and its connection, you know, to history, you know, boxing too. Those seem to be the two sports that are connected more with the history of, you know, American culture and stuff like that. But in football, the Steelers, that's one reason they're so dominant in the 70s,
you know,
because of that.
And you talk about going back to your forte, baseball, and a great line here, and people forget, as the son of the most underrated member of the Big Red Machine, Ken Griffey Jr. raised the ball well beyond the accomplishments of his dad, a three-time All-Star, career 9-2-9 hitter with 200 steals. His dad, those are good numbers. As a 20-year-old sophomore, Jr. hit 22 home runs to exceed his father's career high and started a streak of 500 consecutive 300 seasons. Even senior, a seven-time 300 hitter, never approached. You know, those are just some that's a great line, too. You also talked about, did I have this piece about Griffey? That was a great line that Barry Bonds had wrote. Let me see if I can find it. But you talked about Willie.
While you're doing that, let me say this.
Sure.
You know, Nate and Doc, you obviously are experts, you know, in regard to baseball. But for the uninitiated, for our fans that'll be, you know, listening to you know, this broadcast and going to the archives and listening to us, to get a proper perspective of how hard it is to hit a baseball, and especially major league pitching. I'm not talking about the greatest major league pitching, just people who have made the majors, okay? I challenge you who are able to go to the nearest batting cage on one Saturday afternoon and don't dare put the pitching on high or fast pitch. Put it on medium and take your best whack. And take your best friend who's athletic, who you think will may have a chance to do that, your best athletic friend who's, you know, the athlete, quite the athlete, weekend warrior, whatever, and challenge him to hit the medium pitching
machine
speed.
The
machine, yes, sir, going at the batting cage, and then you'll only get a slight idea of how hard it is to actually hit major league pitching.
Not only that, with two on and two out in the bottom of the seventh inning of the game, you're trying to win. You know what I mean?
You know, Doc, I told the story once. I think Nate was on, and I'll say it again quickly. You know, I didn't know how much heart that it took to play professional baseball and to stand up there with guys. And one day I was at the Yankee Stadium. I told this story, and the great Goose Gossage was hitting the gun at, I think, 100 miles an hour, 100. And Doc, the guy was throwing a laser, Doc, laser. And I knew right then and there, and when it hit the glove, Doc, it sounded like there was a shotgun going off. And I knew right then that, wow, I had no idea it takes this much guts to play Major League Baseball.
Oh, and yeah, and to tell the different pitches. How do they see the different pitches at that speed? You know what I mean? I'm just amazed. You know,
and I was amazed. I remember, I'll never forget sitting around the batting cage. Sure, you were a great hitter, Tommy Davis was, only African American to win the batting title back-to-back. And he was sitting at, they were standing at the batting, him, Bobby Gretchen, somebody else. And I'll never forget it. And they were talking to Tommy, and Tommy said, look, if I throw, if I pick up some dirt and throw it down on the right side, I'm going to left field. And if I take the dirt and put it on the left side of it, you know, he was giving them signals. I mean, he's not concerned about who the pitcher is. I mean, this is like if he's got a base hit in his pocket. This is how great a hitter guy. He says, if I throw the dirt down to the left side, I mean, to the right side. I'm saying, wow. I mean, this guy's not concerned who the pitcher is. I mean, just the kind of hitter that he was. I mean, I'd never forget that. You know, if I throw the dirt down to the right side, you know, I'm going to hit it to right field. I said, this is amazing. This is amazing. Going back to you, what you talked earlier, we're going to close in a moment, about Mace. For some, Mace was the symbol of a player whom fans felt might have held on for too long. It's oddly ironic that these two seasons with the Mets, at the time when few players remained active in their 40s, could even impact one's image of Mace's storied career. More appropriate would be to imagine what Mace might have done had he not lost two seasons to the military following his rookie season. Eddie Mathis and Tony C, the only others to hit 20 homers as rookies before the age of 21, hit 87 and 60 respectively in their second and third seasons combined. Had Mace reached those totals in 1952 and 53, it would have been his record that Aaron was chasing and not Babe Ruth's. Just thought we were to put that in perspective. And as you and we talked about that, Nate B. Baseball, I'm looking for another thing here where Barry Bonds talked about Ken Griffey Jr., and then we'll probably get ready to close it out. Rooney, has there been anybody in your venue that was sort of a – let me leave something about Barry. I was something about Barry. It's only fitting that Barry Bonds would be on pace to become the only player in history to steal 400 bases and hit 400 home runs. His father, Barry Bonds, is the only player to have multiple 30-home run, 30-30 seasons from 1990 to 1997. Only one player, Sammy Sosa, in 1995, has more steals and more home runs than Barry Bonds in the same season. For an even better gauge of his unique combination of speed and power, consider that only three players with as many stolen bases hit as half as many home runs, Ricky Henderson, Joe Morgan, and Paul Molitor, and none of them is within 150 home runs as Bonds. And at the same time, of the 22 players with as many home runs as Bonds, only two stole half as many bases, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, and neither is within 100 steals of Bonds. Somebody said, Thrift, every one of those players, like Barry Bonds, Hank Aaron, all those top special guys have a tremendous brain, a visual system that enables them to see beyond what the average person can see. They have the ability for the brain to be alpha state for performances, a state of euphoria where the ball looks larger than normal and seems to be traveling at a slower speed. Michael Jordan had the same thing in basketball. The great ones get it in that state more often. Plus, they are geniuses in that field. Ted Williams was a genius at hitting. Asked him once what percentage of the time he knew what a pitcher was going to throw. He said, okay, Rooney, you ready for this, Rooney? 75% of the time.
Wow.
75% of the time. Mind-boggling.
It is. Really is, considering what those guys do. I mean, really.
Well, Barry Bonds, there's a story of him, you know, he had legendary vision with his eyesight, and there's a story I read a reputable book, I forget who exactly the author was, but I think this is fitting of Barry Bonds, is basically he's in the Giants clubhouse, and people are sitting by him, and he's predicting every pitch because the pitcher's giving some sort of tell, you know, that nobody else can see. Nobody else in the dugout can see what the tell is. But the pitcher's giving a tell, and Bonds is predicting every pitch. But the guys asked him to tell what the tell was. You know, but he wouldn't tell them. But they were just amazed that that he could, that no one else on the team could see that the pitcher was giving some sort of tell, giving away his pitches that nobody else could see. Nobody else could see it.
And Barry said that. They said there was a knock on Barry's as well, that Barry wouldn't divulge that. And Barry said, you know, in the age of free agency, I can't tell you that because the guy may be my teammate or I may not be your teammate.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah? That's what Barry said. Here's Barry, too. What Junior is going to do throughout the course of his career is going to well overtake anything I've ever done. Junior started in the game 3 weeks younger than I was when I came into the league, 3 years younger. He's going to take the game to another level that I don't think anyone is going to be able to catch up to. Sure, someday there will be some other kid who comes along and may be as good as him, but Junior will surpass him throughout his career by a lot, not by a little, by a lot. That's what Bond said about Junior, and if he hadn't got hurt, who knows what he would have happened. Some great baseball players. The outfield of this year, though, I remember Barry said something one time, and they asked Barry, who's the best player? And Barry, in his ingenious, eloquent way, said, I'm the best left fielder. He's the best center fielder. And this era, there's no question about that. Would Dave Winfield be the right fielder of that era, maybe baseball?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, Dave Winfield's incredible. And just to say something about Junior is that those hamstring injuries, you know, he got to Cincinnati. And Junior was like one of the all-time good guys. I mean, he came to Cincinnati. He wanted to come back to, you know.
His home. Come home.
His home, yeah. He wanted to come home. And if it weren't for those hamstring injuries, and it makes me think of a funny thing, something that was just in the news, is that there was a knock on RG3 about having a selfish streak. And if there can be a knock on Ken Griffey Jr., which I think it's hilarious to knock an athlete for having a selfish streak, because had Ken Griffey Jr. been more selfish and ambitious as, say, a Barry Bonds or Michael Jordan, Ken Griffey Jr. may have been even better, because the knock on him was that he didn't have this singular, you know, selfish
desire,
ambition
to be
the
best. RG3, explain to the fans who RG3 is.
Yeah, RG3, you know, he's going to be the second overall pick by the Washington Redskins, the Heisman winner out of Baylor. And an anonymous scout came out in the Milwaukee Sentinel or the Milwaukee newspaper and said he had a selfish streak, and it's been a lot in the news, even though it's, to me, it's kind of silly. But what great athlete doesn't have a selfish streak?
I remember what Will Chamberlain said. Not Will Chamberlain, what Bill Russell said about Chamberlain.
Yeah.
He said, you know, if Chamberlain was mean, he would have scored a lot more points.
Yeah.
You know, he was such a great guy. I remember Johnny Green telling me he's giving it a dunk a ball, and Johnny Green's arm was up there, and Will let the ball go. And after the end of the game, he went by and told Johnny, you know, thanks a lot. And told Will, thanks a lot.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you know, you could have broke my arm. And Will said, I'm not going to break your arm over no 2 points, man. You ain't gonna
come
for that. You know,
yeah.
And I tell the story of Will inviting me and Sal down to his restaurant in Florida. Sal got down there and went in and said, hey, Mr. Chamberlain, invited me down. They got the phone. Will confirmed it. And he said, Mel, my money was no good there. You know what I mean? I missed him initially. Great friend, great player, but they say, you know, Will had a mean streak, man. Will could have been. When Will scored the 100 points, they told Bill Russell, and Bill Russell acted nonchalantly, unsurprised. Somebody said, well, aren't you surprised? And Russell said, what for? He said, he scored 83 about 3 weeks ago. gentlemen, closing minutes. Navy baseball, last thoughts as we close this week.
I just want to correct myself that John Starks went to Alabama and Grammy State too. I just think the Dodgers, Magic Johnson, and then you got Matt Kemp. I think the Dodgers are back, and they're going to return to greatness here shortly as an organization.
We do that outfield. It's Griffey, it's Bonds, and it's Winfield. Second base is Alomar, no question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, look what he did. You know, in several places, and including Toronto, you know, where he lived in the stadium in one of those suites there.
Yeah. Yeah, a great deal. Well, that's something, man. But never be late for the ballpark, man.
Yeah.
You know, meet somebody at the park. We're already home. But Ozzie's a shortstop, or is it A-Rod? Or Jesus, who's a shortstop?
I I have to give it to A-Rod just because, I mean, the offensive, and he's a good defensive player too, but that production from the shortstop position at offense, I mean, from any position, but geez, his bat, I would definitely want that in the lineup.
The third base? Right?
Oh, third base. Well, if you got, I don't know. I mean.
Or is it Chipper Jones?
Who was the first person you said at third
George
base?
Brett. George Brett.
If you go to Chipper Jones, I would go more this era, but I it's tough because if you look at the numbers and if you look at the era Chipper Jones played in versus George Brett, you know, how the numbers started, everybody started hitting, you know, better. I would rather have George Brett. You know, if I'm comparing those two things, I would just have to give it to him because I think Chipper Jones has the numbers, but you look at the air and a lot of people, there's a lot of hitting going on versus the Brett was in more of a pitching heavy era, I think. My opinion.
Well, before you
and Doc continue, I just want to let you all know that I see my phone is blinking here, so it's a very strong possibility that within the next 30 seconds to a minute, I